space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Coming to you live, duct tape and baling wire and all. So it's time to get right down to it. Let's get a little bit rowdy. That old crazy hair guy's at it again here. So why Mad Science? All right, Mad Science Show's live. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one but four separate chat rooms so we can squeeze everybody in here. You know, no pushing, no shoving, plenty of room. In the back or the front and the side, there's vacancies available. Anyway, also while you're on the super chat room, scroll down here and click on the People for People radio link. Go over and say hi to those wonderful folks over there. And don't forget to check out Wolf Spirit Radio and all the other affiliated networks that you find listed out here. And so anyway, thanks to everybody for tuning in, and thanks for all the podcasts and rebroadcasts and all the good comments coming in here recently. It's a nice thing to hear once in a while. So with that said, let's make a little racket for a second.
Is the shuttle's fuel tank. It may only be 130 miles to space, but to cover that distance, the engines will use 500,000 gallons of fuel, and that works out at 2 feet to the gallon. Despite the cost, however, NASA does need to test these engines once in a while. So they built this place in the wetlands of Mississippi. The first thing they installed was a huge loudspeaker, through which they played white noise to simulate the sound of a rocket. They then sent a number of trucks in different directions out into the wilderness, and the drivers were ordered to stop when the noise levels became acceptable. This gave them an imaginary boundary line, and anyone living on the inside of it was offered a simple choice. Stay, and you'll never hear another television program as long as you live. Or take the NASA shilling and get out. No one stayed, and NASA ended up with exactly what it wanted. 125,000 acres of nothing. They even had to move 5 cemeteries, because the noise they were planning on making would wake the dead. Worry if you can't hear what I'm saying. I couldn't even hear myself. This is the loudest sound you could possibly conceive. And, as it turns out, the cleanest. Now, the most amazing thing is that cloud up there, which was generated by the engine, is just a mixture of hydrogen and oxygen. It's water vapor. And in about an hour's time, someone in Mississippi is going to get wet washing. It will actually rain.
I told you. It's raining. That's unbelievable. Oh.
NASA's plane, God, it's making its own weather.
So, let's see, 125,000 acres. Told everybody they gotta take some money and leave, or they wouldn't be able to hear their TV anymore. And was able to make a pretty fairly substantial size rain cloud using hydrogen technology. You know, a lot of money must have went into buying 125,000 acres. A lot of things that I sit here and I think about whenever I'm watching this particular little clip here from, I don't remember even which doggone show that was on. But one of the things I think about is that we got the technology to quite literally make it rain anywhere where we want. And so, you know, aka weather modification techniques and stuff, it's, you're a tinfoil hat wearing person if you talk about it. And then I also think about in areas where there's droughts that, this could actually be something that could be done. You know, make a little bit of noise, make a little bit of water, water the crops kind of stuff, you know. It's technology that, is basically proven science. It's blatantly obvious, proven science. Now, they want to use this for a rocket engine to, go to space and all that kind of stuff. But you did hear how much fuel they said they actually use. And the fuel mileage, I think he said something about only a couple feet per gallon or something like that. that's pretty amazing. Anyway, but the point about that is, there's technology available right now that has the capabilities of resolving, pretty much every doggone issue under the sun. And when you sit back and you contemplate on why it is that we've ever had any wars in this world, most generally it ends up being over resources is probably the top one. Of course, you'd probably have to Google that to see... see if it's even close to what's the truth or whatever, but I don't know. Can you trust Google? Try DuckDuckGo. That might be more. You might get a better response, because I typed in why energy is not possible, and I get this message at the top of the deal right before all the other search results. It says why free energy is impossible. Scientists believe that free energy is impossible, and their belief simply closes all doors, dissolving the free energy myths. Free energy does not violate any physical laws, nor conservation laws, and the second laws of thermodynamics. When you eat normal food, you are eating free energy. So if you scroll down this search page out there, you'll see you see Robert Murray Smith up there in a video. That's pretty cool. All right, there's a good one out there. He's a good researcher. But anyway, of course, right beside him, it looks like there's a couple people basically debunking free energy and stuff like that. And look at this. It says free energy generator is not possible. Free energy not possible. Look at this explanation. All kinds of people out there trying to kick free energy to the curb, which basically, when you get somebody like Robert Murray Smith, who's out there doing really good work in graphene technology and battery and capacitor technology, that's a good researcher right there. I don't care what anybody says. There's a lot of people out there just like him. And there's a lot of people that didn't fare so well in the average world because, whenever you get too close to a good idea and you start looking like you might actually make it to market or something like that, or it's catching too much attention, and suddenly for some reason, people end up having heart attacks or become sick or, die of a broken heart or whatever, all this kind of stuff. And it just doesn't make any doggone sense to me why it is that the world's in the state of affair, outside of the fact that it's people wanting to, keep money and power. Now, I got posted two or three other videos that I'm probably going to play a little bit of the podcast and make some, maybe comments to or whatever, but, let me see which one's next up here in line. Anyway, the ridiculousness that you have to contend with when talking about free energy. See, some people, they find themselves in a trap because they use the terms over unity and zero point, and then those are easily arguable terms that, we can't get something for nothing and all this kind of craziness. But basically, it's all semantics, it's twisting of terminology and all that. Free energy has been proven over and over and over again ad nauseum, and it's ridiculous of how many people, and then I'm even including the average Joe that comes out there, some college educated geek that thinks he knows it all about physics and science. The ridiculousness that you have to put up with those people alone is one of the reasons why mad science is a necessary deal out here. So I ask the question, why mad science? Well, mad science is because I want to help Robert Murray Smith. Mad science is because I want to honor those researchers that are fallen, John Bedini and his brother, and Tesla, all the different researchers that you've heard throughout the entire excuse me, entire histories of this show and, you know, researched on YouTube. There's a lot of brilliant individuals out there that, you know, basically got discouraged. And I, for one, have gotten discouraged so many times, I was ready to just get up and call it a quit. So it's just aggravating. But I'm thinking, without the mad science show, you ain't got nobody pointing out the obvious. These folks are trying to tell you on one side of their neck that free energy ain't possible, but then they're turning around and trying to show you technology that is incredible. I mean, really incredible. You just took a rocket engine and you blasted that rocket engine and you used hydrogen, water, as fuel that you then in turn made a huge cloud that in turn rained. Alright, now think about that type of technology alone. You could specifically put anywhere you want a rain cloud using that type of technology. Now, is it going to make the neighbors mad? Apparently, because whenever they bought their 125,000 acres of land, if you sit down and think about that for a second, people. 125,000 acres. Think about that. And I talk about this world's overpopulated, but a group like NASA that has unlimited funding from you, the taxpayer, the government, gives them money hand over fist. And basically, they have developed a monopoly on all the technologies of the world. And it's not just them alone. It's corporations and companies out there that have basically monopolized on all the technologies of the world. They're the only ones that can get it to market. They're the only ones who seem to be able to get a patent on anything. They're the only ones that seem to be able to pull the brilliant researchers from the pool of brilliant researchers such as the average Joe out there in the garage, the Robert Murray Smiths of the world. You know? The Teslas and, you know, John Bedini's, John Searle, all the different ones you've heard out there. There's a whole list of them. Matter of fact, I'm sure that if you go over there to the chat room, and you scroll up on the very top chat room above the radio player, you'll see this this button that says Stephen's resource page. Now, Stephen Gibbons, he is a really brilliant guy. He's a wonderful soul. He's a, you know, an asset to Shaziz Radio. What he's done is he's taken and put a whole lot of time and effort into actually posting links to all different types of alternative energy researchers, videos, information. And, you know, if you get an opportunity to go check this out, if you're interested in what other people are working on out there and maybe trying to get ideas for specific projects that you're working on, he's already done the footwork for you. Man, somebody needs to give that man some credit, because that took a lot of effort. I look at that page and I'm amazed every time I see it, because he's got just hours and hours worth of links and research. And if you can't find it on there, I'm sure all you can do is drop a note in there. He'll put it on there for you. He seems to be able to find things, you know, every single show relative to what we're talking about. He throws the links and information in there. So as far as, this is what we do here on the Mad Science Show, and even on the Knights of the Round Table. We come together, we share all kinds of information. But I want to thank Stephen again for always the efforts that he's done, and let him know that he's well, you know, appreciated and respected for his efforts. It's just amazing to me. But anyway, moving right along, there are, you know, brilliant researchers all over the place. And every single time the show's over, I ask everybody out there to do me just one simple favor. This one little simple favor. That's just, I'm not asking for any kind of donations or anything like that. All I want you to do is share a link to a podcast, your favorite podcast or your favorite, link here on the Shaziz Radio website. Share today's podcast. Just post it, you know. You'll try to bring some folks over here to say hi, and maybe they'll hear what we're saying, and they'll want to try to see if they can motivate people in their own communities to, gathering up the brilliant minds in their community. See, NASA figured it out. They got the brilliant minds. They make them sign non-disclosure agreements, and every patent that goes through there belongs to NASA, which in turn really should belong to the people, but, you know, their monopoly of the technologies and their unlimited funding. You know, I say unlimited funding, if they're getting $50 million a day, that's a heck of a lot of money. You know what an average researcher like me could do with that kind of money? Well, I can take that $50 million a day and hire some just as brilliant researchers as they got, and we could actually put plans and markets right there in front of everybody so that those who wanted to invest in it could go build it for themselves or hire somebody else to build it. See, the reason why NASA's been so successful all this time is because you keep supporting them. All you taxpayers out there, all the people of the world keep supporting them. You support them financially, you support them by, you know, checking out their stuff. Now, if it's ever supposed to get down to where, you know, the average citizen can actually, benefit from all these technologies come out to you on their time. All right? Meanwhile, you're told by the mainstream media that, there's a war over here. And some people who are angry at the war machine say, well, they're only going over there to fight for oil, which may very well be the case. More likely is the case. They're going over there to fight for resources. They're going over there to fight for a pipeline. You know? And so they get all mad and start raising a ruckus because, they don't like war. They don't like, our military going over there fighting unconstitutional wars or, you know, all this kind of stuff. And they don't look at the whole root cause of everything. It's because of energy. Everything out there is because of energy and resources. That's it. Money. Financial. And that's why, you know, the average Joe who sits out there and comes on to troll the YouTube channels of researchers is trying to open up minds, like myself. I've been called stupid so many times it ain't even ridiculous. It is ridiculous. It's ludicrous. It's beyond ludicrous. I don't know what goes beyond ludicrous. But what's going on out there, though, is that most people that come watch YouTube videos, they don't read the description of the YouTube video that has pertinent information in it that says, is this video asking a question and showing you something cool? Is it say asking you if it's possible? Or is it showing you something in reality that, right under the noses of all the so-called globalist elites of the world, showing you something that if you paid attention to and tried it yourself, you might just very well be surprised? See, instead of people trying to use critical thinking, they want to go out there and try to make themselves seem more intelligent and start to cause problems, mouth off. Oh yeah, this is fake. This, everything's fake. Everything in the world's fake. There ain't no such thing as free energy. It violates the laws of thermodynamics. No, it doesn't violate the laws of thermodynamics, fool. You just ain't paid attention in school. You know, when I say water is fuel, science says water is two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen. All right? H2O. Hydrogen, two hydrogens, one oxygen. All right? Well, it takes three things to start a fire. All right? You have to have a fuel source, which is hydrogen. You have to have oxygen. And you have to have an ignition source, all of which water has. Every single bit of it. If you think I'm crazy, go look at the Lord Kelvin generator where it's actually dropping water through tin cans and producing a high voltage spark. Look into hydrogen cell technology where when you separate the hydrogen or recombine the hydrogen and oxygen together, it releases an electrical charge. Look into all the reasons why you end up with explosions in steam power plants, all right? And try to figure out the physics of what just occurred. So, without beating a dead horse and going into it over and over again of hydrogen explosions and all that kind of stuff. It's one reason why they stopped using hydrogen, and because of like the Hindenburg. Hydrogen's pretty volatile. Of course, you could replace hydrogen with helium. There's other ways to do it. But nonetheless, you know, there were cars running around in the 70s, you know, Stan Myers was driving around a dune buggy on water as fuel. There is still today hydrogen technology. You got, you know, disinformants like the Mythbusters out there trying to debunk hydrogen or make it look so dangerous why we can't use it. But if you understand the laws of physics, and if you understand basic science, and you use those laws of physics to your advantage, you can specifically engineer any material out there, any carbon-based material, any, you know, gas. You can engineer an engine that will use that as fuel, a fuel source. By manipulating gas, you can create plasma. You know, high voltage, I've been talking about plasma forever and a day. They've been doing it for years, folks. They did it in the mercury arc rectifier to make a, you know, turn the high voltage AC into DC current. They've done it in fluorescent bulb starters in modern day. They've done it in neon bulbs, neon signs. And if you go check this stuff out, what I'm telling you, you'll be amazed at what technology you've actually got just in plasma technology alone. So anyway, I'm going to play a bit of this podcast here. And I might start it and stop it. I actually want to try to play all three of these, but let's see. This is the one I want to play next.
For high school students, simple laboratory experiments bring science to life. This particular experiment is also of great interest to professional scientists looking for solutions to the world's energy crisis. The jar is collecting bubbles of hydrogen. It comes from ordinary water through which a small electric current is being passed.
I think it's about finished now.
The collected hydrogen can be combined again with oxygen to produce water and a vast amount of energy.
All right. I don't know if you heard that, but I'm going to back this up just a hair. And in this video, he's lighting the little bit of hydrogen that they collected. And listen for a little sound that sounds kind of like pew!
Oxygen to produce water and a vast amount of energy.
Anyway, and then they cut to a rocket engine going. But nonetheless, the reason why I stopped it right there for a second is because if you're in there, the sound that that thing releases when that hydrogen pops is loud. It's so loud that it overdrives the microphone, and if you go back and look at my video called Hydrogen Danger, you'll hear the same exact effect. But standing there in person, it was loud. It sounded like a cannon going off. That's how loud it was. And we just had a little balloon full of hydrogen when we lit that. So let's keep moving on.
The same reaction is used to power the American space shuttle. Faced by the threat of dwindling oil resources, research teams all over the world have been trying to harness this unruly energy to the...
Okay, now he just said dwindling oil resources, which is another big scam. There is absolutely no way physically possible that we could ever run out of crude oil. Unless you set it all on fire at one doggone time and leave those things burning for years and years and years and years, you will never, ever, 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 until this earth stops doing what it does chemically and physically, you'll never stop the production of crude oil. It's not possible. But nonetheless, Let's give the devil his due, so to speak, because that at least got them motivated into looking into alternative fuel methods outside of the so-called fossil fuels, which is a big hockahooey in itself. But nonetheless, let's keep rolling here.
More mundane task of powering the family car. This car, developed at Melbourne University's Department of Mechanical Engineering, is encouraging evidence that it can be done. It runs on hydrogen instead of petrol, in a modified version of an ordinary internal combustion engine. These modifications have taken 15 years to develop in a long-term research program led by Dr. Harry Watson and Eric Milkins. Dr. Harry Watson.
This car, running as it is now on gasoline, just has a range only of about 40 kilometers. But with a hydride tank installed, we will expect a range of about 200 kilometers. Loaded as we are now to the same weight as though we had the hydride tank, we have made three significant discoveries. The car will keep up with the traffic, even under freeway conditions. The pollution levels from the car are very low, compliant with the most stringent standards existing in the United States or Japan. And lastly, and most significantly, the energy consumption of the car is such that it will go 70% further on the same amount of energy as though it were running on petrol.
Although the car can be driven around the streets like any other vehicle, at least on short journeys, it spends most of its life anchored to a dynamometer, subject to rigorous scientific scrutiny. The researchers are particularly interested in testing the car's exhaust emission under various loads and comparing the results with those of a conventional petrol engine.
Right, now Chris, can you put those results, please? Oh, Harry, these are some results of the petrol car and the hydrogen one. Lots of emissions, hydrocarbons, CO, NOx with petrol, and only a little bit of oxide of nitrogen with the hydrogen.
Oh, I also want to point some out. This video clips inside here are hydrogen power from 1984.
Modification is carefully tested. So far, the results have revealed that the car actually performs better in some ways on hydrogen. It's more efficient by about 40% and produces fewer pollutants. There are no carbon gases, some oxides of nitrogen, and hydrogen dioxide, otherwise known as water, pure enough to drink. Using a bench rig, Eric Milkins demonstrates the most serious problem they've had to face.
Well, that's the backfire problem in a research engine, and we can't have that in a motor car.
Okay, so essentially what he just did is basically he showed that, you know, he exploded what would be basically the equivalence of the cylinder or maybe even the intake from a backfire, because hydrogen is extremely powerful. But see, folks, this is what the problem is. When people see that kind of stuff right there, they automatically assume that, oh no, that stuff's too dangerous. We can't make an engine like that. But what I've been trying to say to people for a long, long time, if you specifically engineer this, see now, this is, they're running it with existing technology, with the way the valves open and close and that kind of stuff. But if you specifically engineer this for just such a purpose to run it on that type of fuel, number one, you don't need near the amount of fuel that it takes to run an engine down the road. When you listen to the efficiency numbers on the internal combustion engine, it's crazy. It's only 20-30% efficient. When you listen to the efficiencies on ones running on hydrogen, the efficiency level goes up. If you specifically engineer this, because you know how powerful this fuel is, if you specifically engineer this to run on that type of fuel and that type of fuel alone, then you will find out the efficiency will go up drastically. Because the power that hydrogen actually has is it multitudes times more than what you can get out of, gallon for gallon from water to actual gasoline itself. So, you know, with that said, specifically engineered, you're going to use less fuel, get more power, better results, and a longer lasting engine. So let's keep going.
This is a cutaway section of a cylinder head, and this is the special valve we've developed to control that backfire problem. The valve allows air in before the hydrogen, and so cools the charge. Also, we have to have special coatings inside the cylinder. We have to have special lubricants. Finally, under some high load conditions, we have to resort to water injection.
Eventually, the modifications will be controlled electronically, but for the moment, the systems are mechanical. The inlet system has been modified to replace the carburetor. The distributor now rotates as the vehicle accelerates, while controlling the gas flow sets the engine speed. In these experiments, hydrogen is stored under pressure in large cylinders.
All right, there's another stinker right there, too. He's getting ready to tell you why that's not a very good deal. Is that you actually have the capability of making hydrogen on demand. And a lot of the arguments out there is, oh, no, you got to use electrolysis process, and that uses too many watts, too much amps, and all this kind of jazz. That's because they're ignoring the laws of physics. That's because they're ignoring basic science. They're ignoring the fact that you can take water and, you know, like some argue, oh, well, you can't compress a liquid. Of course you can't compress a liquid. That's how come hydraulics works. But you can compress a gas. And when you boil water into steam, what is it now? Is it a liquid or is it a gas? So the ridiculousness of what is occurring, you don't have to store this pure hydrogen in tanks. And that's another thing that the Mythbusters started talking about, how much hydrogen it takes to drive down a road and the dangers of it. They didn't use a proper flashback arrestor and got an explosion, well, actually an implosion through the carburetor. But nonetheless, it made a big loud boom and all that kind of stuff. And they said, well, that's probably why we don't use hydrogen. Helping to perpetuate the oil industry, the gasoline, and all that kind of stuff, Fossil fuels. The same one that keep all hollering about how it's supposed to be causing climate change and all that craziness. Here we go.
Compared with petrol, hydrogen performs very badly. Despite their size and weight, these cylinders contain only enough gas to drive the car for 40 kilometers. This problem is being tackled by Dr. Douglas Bradhurst and his team at CSIRO's Division of Energy Chemistry in Sydney. They are experimenting with a metal hydride storage system, a radiator-sized arrangement of pipes filled with as much gas as a conventional cylinder, but at lower pressure. Using a test rig based on a small rotary engine without a carburetor, they're able to compare the two storage systems. They have to make sure it's possible to extract the gas from the new system smoothly and fast enough to supply the engine. The storage pipes are actually solid. They're packed with a powdered metallic alloy of iron and titanium. Under slight pressure, the hydrogen will bond chemically to the alloy structure, forming a metallic hydride. A whole family of alloys has been developed with this useful trick. Each one performs best at a unique combination of temperature and pressure. Their absorption characteristics are tested in collaboration with Dr. Watson's project at Melbourne University as part of a program to develop new alloys with greater storage capacity. In searching for ways to produce hydrogen from water efficiently and economically, a number of new approaches have been...
All right, listen to this one really close. And keep in mind, I done said this video was in 1984 is when this research was going on.
...being tried. At CSIRO's Division of Applied Organic Chemistry in Melbourne, Dr. Wolf Sassy and his team have been investigating how a special ruthenium dye responds to light. The dye reacts photochemically to break down the water molecules and produce hydrogen using light rather than electricity. The idea behind Dr. Sassy's work is to use the energy of sunlight to power this hydrogen-producing reactor.
The experiment you just saw is, in a sense, very efficient. In fact, it's 10 times more efficient than what most of our competitors overseas can do. On the other hand, we still have to solve the problem of stability. We have to produce components which last longer so that these compounds don't have to be renewed too often. The ultimate picture that we have in our minds is that of a shallow lake or pond which will be sitting in the sun, slowly producing hydrogen day in, day out, whether the sun is shining or not. And this picture is something which is in the mind of many people in this country and overseas. Whether it can be realized will depend, of course, on the success of our work and the work of other people.
This intriguing machine is a cross between a photovoltaic cell and a solar water heater. It's a completely different approach being tried by Dr. Bradhurst in Sydney. He's interested in adapting these existing technologies in order to generate hydrogen. The curved reflector focuses sunlight onto a central tube containing a pair of electrodes. One is made of titanium with a coating of titanium oxide. This functions as a semiconducting layer to absorb light and generate bubbles of gas. The economics of the approach are very promising. The problem is to scale it up and increase the efficiency.
This collector demonstrates that hydrogen fuel can be produced from solar energy, either for domestic use or as a vehicle fuel. We have designed a flat plate collector, rather like a domestic solar water heater, but the amount of hydrogen you could get from something like that would only fuel your car for half a kilometre. So our laboratory research is aimed primarily at improving this efficiency up to the point where useful amounts of hydrogen are produced. The whole beauty of hydrogen is that it has 3 times the energy per unit weight of gasoline.
This technology could have a spectacular effect, not only on the car, but the home of the future. It's possible that domestic solar collectors containing semiconductor electrodes could heat the domestic water supply as well as providing enough hydrogen to power the family car. These preliminary experiments point towards a whole family of new technologies. They're part of the motorist's secret dream, to run a car on nature's unmetered gifts, sunlight, air, and water.
So, you heard that. With that said, I'm going to say something really crazy. Imagine this. Oxygen therapy and hydrogen therapy. Think about it. Go out and do a little bit of research about it. Your standard automobile internal combustion engine, whether it be diesel or whether it be gasoline, petrol, whichever word you use, it doesn't matter. If you run your exhaust pipe up inside that car, you're going to get carbon monoxide poisoning and not fare so well. All right. First you get headache and maybe disoriented, and then you end up dying because carbon monoxide is heavier than oxygen, and so it will displace oxygen. So if you're driving a car that's using hydrogen technology, not only does it have the potential of getting you down the road, but it also has safety deals in there too, and even possible health benefits for actually putting oxygen into your doggone car. You know, while it's producing water out one side, while it's producing nitrogen and oxygen, and hydrogen for your fuel and oxygen for your fuel, you could have supplementary systems that would actually oxygenate the cab of your vehicle. So, you know, if you accidentally fell asleep in your car with it running in the doggone garage or something like that, think about what I'm saying here. All right? Hydrogen technology, water itself, is, according to science, the most stable molecule on the planet. All right? And it can be the most destructive molecule on the planet. It can be used for life-sustaining liquid. You got to have water. Your body can only live for so many days without water. You need it to survive. Puts that energy and liquefies your body, you know, lubricates everything, gets you going and all that, you know, and it puts oxygen in there as well. there's so many benefits of water, it's just mind-blowing. So you're sitting on the actual miracle fuel, miracle cure, hyperbaric oxygen chambers treatments. Go look at that and go look at the results of what they have actually accomplished with that specific technology. And go even look into hydrogen peroxide and stuff like that. Just do your own research. And just listen to what people have to say about this stuff. Alright, there's all kinds of benefits. It's just mind-blowing. So when you want to talk about being environmentally friendly, then, you know, hydrogen technology is environmentally friendly. You see, at least you did hear, if you watched the video, you can actually watch the videos by clicking on the links that are posted in the chat room. But you heard me play the podcast the very beginning of the show, where NASA basically made a huge water cloud and made it rain using hydrogen technology. All right, it didn't pollute it. It was exhaust coming out of a big old rocket ship that produced no toxins. It had fresh water and it rained. All right, so that's pretty amazing in itself. But nonetheless, the technology that it sounds like I'm out here trying to promote hydrogen technology, which I guess to an extent, yeah, I am. But it's not the only thing that we have as far as alternative energy. If you want to use electricity and you're understanding how the physics of electricity, how the mechanics, the actual mechanical workings of what's going on when we're using electricity, then you can make it the most efficient possible. The most incredible efficiency can be achieved, and it just blows my doors off. So with that, I want to get into this next little video right here. I don't remember which YouTuber it is. I'll look when it gets on there, because I like to give them a shout out because they're working on hydrogen technology, and there's things that's going on in this. We're basically using catalytic converter to produce heat, and heat is another one of the things that we have. On one hand, it's a problem if it's getting your engine too hot or your electronics too hot, but heat used properly can do amazing things. It's most generally keep you warm and cook your food. So here we go. Let's start with this one here.
Hi, Steve here again with another HCAT video. It's been a while since I posted anything, but I wanted to get some parts so that I could do a proper video. What I've got here is just some iron pipe that I bought from Home Depot with brass fittings on the top and the bottom. Inside of this, I've got a catalytic converter. Looks similar to this. And this fits perfectly into the 1¼-inch tube. I've got some nice heat sinks coming that will fit around this. They're for LEDs, but they're about that wide in diameter, 82 millimeter diameter, and this is 35 millimeter here, so they'll fit right down on it. And I've got them 90 millimeter tall, which is just 10 millimeter shy of this. I was going to take that and my CNC, I was going to make some caps for both sides of this and essentially make this type of apparatus.
What he's showing is he's actually got, they have smaller catalytic converters, not as large like the ones you think about on your car. There's other smaller catalytic converters. And when you get this reaction started, you can use just the gas alone that interacts with the materials inside the catalytic converter and produces amazing amounts of heat. So let's keep this one rolling here.
With some large heat sinks on the outside. Now, got those on order. Inside of the bottom of this here, there is some some stainless steel wool, and I've got it packed in through about here. The cat starts about here, all the way up to the top, and then from there down I've packed in stainless steel wool. Seems to be working okay. I can run this up to about a liter a minute, and then I do get a flashback. But let me show you the temperature. I can catch the temperature here. Got it running. It's been going for quite a while, so that I could show you this video. But let's see. There is one point on here that's upwards of 300 degrees, but 275 about right there.
Alright, pause this for just a second.
On the inf-
your average water heater out there, let's back up a second. Your average vehicle runs at anywhere from 100 to 280 degrees Fahrenheit, or 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what that is in Celsius, but basically anything above that, you know, your engine will overheat and destroy itself if you can't cool it down. You're not going to want your doggone water to be 180 degrees if you're going to take a shower. So, with that said, basically, he's using a little bit of electricity, and he's using water to heat water. Did you hear what I just said? He's using water to heat water. So, using the physics of what happens with this process that he's going on right now, producing hydrogen using a little bit of electricity, and using those, when the hydrogen and oxygen break down, using that through a catalytic converter that is creating a reaction that is producing heats up to 300 degrees or higher, depending on how long he's running or how much gas he puts to it. So he just used the laws of physics to his advantage to be able to heat water using water. Now, I don't know I don't know what it's going to take to get the average Joe to have an aha moment when that light bulb pops on above their head and they, oh wow, are you serious? I got an idea. But this show's going to get even better because at some point the next one on the next podcast is going to talk about how you can get a flame from hydrogen technology to burn underwater. Think about it. He lights the torch and he sticks it underwater and it's still burning. So, by understanding the laws of physics, you're not violating any of the laws of thermodynamics. You're using the laws of physics to your advantage and you're getting some work done. And you're doing it really efficiently. So let's keep rolling here.
But this will be the input. Right here I've got my HHO coming in. I put these copper tubes on here because it gets extremely hot. And first time I tried this, I was just using this fitting here with some of my green tubing. And it got really hot right here and melted it. So I'm going to do this.
Alright, we're going to pause real quick there again. Sorry for all the pauses, but this is really important stuff because heating and cooling, HVAC. You just heard the very first part of this deal where he's pumping hydrogen gas, HHO, up into the bottom of this catalytic converter. Some of that heat is transferring out of the pipe that he's got, and it's going back down the copper tube down here. So it's essentially like an air compressor compressing the gas and getting the gas hot. All right? Keep that in mind. He's getting the gas hot. It's transferring from that pipe back down the copper tubing to a certain extent until that heat's able to dissipate, so that he's got a longer copper tubing in order to keep his hose from melting. All right, now we're getting ready to talk about the output side of this deal.
Copper. So we got copper here, so it'll dissipate the heat out. By the time it gets over here, it's cold. So I've got about 1 liter a minute going in right now. And then up here, I've got a coil. Because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to cool that. And this is my observation. There's hydrogen gas, pure hydrogen gas coming off of this. Because you've got your HHO, and it's, you know, 66% hydrogen, 33% oxygen. When that oxygen is consumed, what you have left is 33% hydrogen, and it should be pretty dang pure. So what I've done is I made this tube so that to cool it, to cool the hydrogen as it comes out, and to get to condense, which I think is pretty cool, condense water that's coming out of it. And I wanted to show you the, you can see a drop of water right there. When hydrogen and oxygen combine back together, it creates water. You can see some water passing through there right now. And you can see that the water is being pushed. So that's how I can illustrate that there's hydrogen coming out the end.
All right, two things here. Two very important things here. First off, he just said that the water was being pushed out the deal. And you can see it in the video. And it's got a pretty good substantial amount of water building up inside there, because the condensation water, he made the coil on the outside. Cooling that gas back down is then turning to put the hydrogen and oxygen back together and putting water out the other side. So you just took water, you used it to produce heat, and now you're recombining that water back into water again. And you're not even having to use a pump to circulate that water, because the pressure of the hydrogen keeps it pushing forward. So you don't even need an electric pump to get the water back out of the system again. So the next thing that I want to point out is, on the input side of the deal, you had heat being generated. You have the technology available to quite literally build air conditioners, refrigerators, freezers that do not require a compressor pump. Just using the physics alone, just the physics alone of what happens when you use water. In this video here, he used water to heat water and put every bit of what's necessary for heating and cooling right there in front of the world. In this one little video. Now, anybody else watching this video that doesn't think like the mad science guy, anybody else watching this video would say, yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, I don't know what you do with it, but that's pretty cool. No, I'm looking at this thing as, I don't have to have a compressor for my air conditioner, so I'm not going to be running electricity to run my doggone air conditioner. I'm only going to run electricity to produce the hydrogen necessary to basically get this doggone process going, where I'm getting heat on one side of the tubing and I'm getting cool on the other side of the tubing. So now you could either turn that into an evaporated cooling system, or you could actually turn it into an air conditioning type of system. Both, same thing, whatever. Nonetheless. And if you actually go back and listen to, I think he might repeat it on how much voltage input and how much hydrogen that he was actually producing, which isn't really all that much when you compare to basically what it's going to take to run your air conditioner the good old-fashioned way. So let's keep this going. And this guy, I don't know if he's even thinking about this for the purpose of HVAC, you know, heating and cooling kind of stuff. But the technology's right there. It's right there in front of the world. And people wonder why I call it mad science. NASA can make rain clouds. This guy here is showing you how to make basically an air conditioner or a heater, vice versa, and get water out the other end using water to heat water. Water and electricity. Here we go.
Because it's not steam, because the water is cool, cooled from this coil. And you can see that there. So we've got a little bit of hydrogen coming out the end. And really, I don't really think it's any concern at all. Last night I had this set up with some plastic tubes, and I was able to get this little tip. It's a 0.035 welding tip. I was able to light a flame on that, and you couldn't see it. It's very, very tiny, but I guess you could stick my finger in front of that and it would burn me. So I know that there's hydrogen coming out. I wanted to demonstrate that, but I couldn't get the flame to sustain itself.
Alright, he said he couldn't get the flame to sustain itself, but since he's got water coming out the other side, now if I could talk to the guy and explain to him what he could have done with that, you could take that water and you could put it into the bottom of a container, and the hydrogen has enough pressure to push that water into that container, and any leftover hydrogen would rise above the water molecules up into the top lid of it. It'd act just like a bubbler on a hydrogen cell. And so this thing would continue to push water into the bottom of the jar, and then at the top you'd have hydrogen gas that you could then in turn build up to pressurize. And when that water was equal to the pressure in the jar was equal to the pressure that's on the opposite side became equal, then it would stop pushing water in it. At that point, now you've got hydrogen that's already pressurized that you can run. So maybe even if it's only intermittently, you could still have the situation set up so that when it gets to a certain point, a pressure valve will open up, releasing the hydrogen that's stored in there, the leftover hydrogen from what's going on in this process, and then be able to burn that for, you know, heat. There you go. And then when all the hydrogen's released again, the same process that was making the water go in one direction would go back, you know, because the equalization would be gone. So it's going to take the path of least resistance, and now the water's going back in there, and the water itself will use hydraulics to literally keep pushing the water up in the jar. And then when you had the water to the level that you wanted it, you could also take and drain that water back off, emptying that jar back out again and restarting the process. So you could take the water that you just pushed out one side, either put it over into a drinking flask or rotate it back around into your hydrogen cell so that you could replenish the water in your hydrogen cell. I hope that people are really seeing this in their head as I'm sharing this with you, because there, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. And if you think that look, these folks get out there and they start talking about perpetual motion, getting a machine to run itself, all right? And the laws of physics will debunk it all the dang time, and it's ridiculous. And this is why they try to say free energy ain't possible. Zero point or over unity, same exact concept. They use those terminologies, perpetual motion, zero point, and over unity. You use those three terminology, and even the terminology free energy itself, in order to try to debunk the fact that energy is free. Take away the zero point, take away the over unity, take away the doggone whatever. The free energy cannot be debunked. Absolutely, without any shadow of a doubt, cannot be debunked. Nature has been doing what nature's been doing for, according to them, billions of years. Alright? And that's how long the sun's been burning up there. In supposed a vacuum, whatever. Alright? Give the devil his due, so to speak. If you hear what they say, then free energy is possible. But if you turn around and try to say free energy is possible, then you're going to catch it. You're going to catch it from the trolls, and you're going to catch it from the educated idiots of the world. They're going to come out there and try to make themselves sound smarter while trying to tell you that you don't know what you're talking about. But you're listening to a crazy-haired guy that paid attention in science school, and I know what I'm talking about. The guy's sitting here explaining his project, and I'm sitting here watching it mechanically in my head, and I'm telling you, you could take this same technology. He already showed the first hose was too close to the doggone system, and it melted, and so it was a problem. So he had to use copper tubing going down there, and the copper tubing had to be long enough away from the system so that the hose on the other end wouldn't reach its thermal breakdown and melt as well. But even after running it for quite some time, that heat's going to continue to transfer. If it wasn't out there into the air, then it would keep on getting hot until that rubber, which has a lower melting temperature than the metal, would reach its thermal breakdown and it would fail. So we know this kind of stuff. We know what the problems are, and we know exactly how to fix them. We can make the perfect engineered air conditioners, refrigerators, freezers, motor vehicles, perfectly engineered to be so incredibly efficient and so incredibly environmentally friendly that it's ludicrous. That's why mad science is still around. Because as I sit here and I listen to this stuff and I'm sitting here, look, man, you just showed the world free energy, and this doesn't even scratch the surface. You know, I'm just getting started. You know, let's go a little bit further here.
But hopefully this is enough in this video to prove that, you know, the hydrogen is coming out at the end. Check the temperature again. There's 310.
310 you can imagine Fahrenheit.
What kind of heat would be drawn off of this with some heat sinks around it. Let me show you the power supply. Here's the HHO going down through that tube, up this tube, into a large flash arrestor. Out of that flash arrestor through this clear tube, down over here, not to my mess. Here's the reservoir tank, and here's the HHO cell that's producing the HHO. Power supply there, powering this PWM board that's running at about 15 amps. And here's my voltage, 9.7. So we're running
15 amps at 9.7. Maybe let's just round it up to 10 volts. 15 amps at 10 volts that he's done all this so far.
This is going to be a little bit less than 1 liter a minute. This cell will produce a liter per minute with 165 watts. So let's see, 9.72.
1 liter a minute at 65 watts.
Like about 14.9, we'll just say 15. So 145 watts. So we're close to a liter per minute. So if I turn this up to about 18 amps, let's see what we get there. 17.2 times 9.9, 170. So we're at a liter per minute. This is at the point where this will flash back. I just want to show you the water that's produced. It just belched out a bunch of water there.
Yeah, all this time it's continued to push water out that hose. And you just heard the measurements and all that kind of stuff on there. Plus, keep in mind, we're talking, you may reach 300 degrees Fahrenheit. at that amperage and wattage and voltage and stuff. And so, with that said, if you go watch my video, Redneck Hot Tub, and we weren't nowhere near that kind of doggone efficiency as far as, even though it was incredibly efficient because it was heating that whole entire tub with no insulation under it, open to the atmosphere, would heat it up hot enough that if you left it going too long, that it would, you would not be able to sit in it. It would boil you. It would kill you. It's too hot. You had to let the doggone thing cool down. So, once you got it up to operating temperature, it didn't take nothing to maintain it, and you actually had to shut the doggone thing off. And I was in that thing in the dead of winter. There was snow and ice out, and I'm in my swimming shorts, and I'm outside in that hot tub using the coffee pot element for the doggone heating element. You see what I'm trying to say here, people? I mean, it's like ridiculously simple. And I don't understand why. Well, I do understand financially why the rest of the world hasn't caught up, but what I don't understand is why the average Joe hasn't been able to recognize what they're seeing right before their very eyes. This is just one. We haven't even got into all the others that we've talked about on this show. There are so many different ways. If you understand what it is that I'm saying, there are so many different ways. We don't change anything as far as, they say energy can neither be created nor destroyed. We're not creating it. We're not destroying it. We're disrupting it, and we're getting work done while nature slaps itself back into balance again. It's that simple. Once you understand that, you can use the laws of physics to your advantage. If you don't want the lens effect, then don't invoke the lens effect. Go around it.
So, this system can produce heat that in turn could produce energy, and in turn you would get fresh water. So, kind of neat.
Kind of neat.
Maybe
don't sell yourself short. That's better than kind of neat. You did it in your garage, and that's better than 99.9% of all the mainstream scientists that are out there that pretty much sold their soul to the devil. So this is the kind of researcher I want to come here. This is the kind of researcher that you need on your dream team. So if you can track this guy down and find him, send him over to the Mad Science Show. If you get to him before I do, just give him a message. Oh, Shaziz want to talk to him. But anyway, you know, he said, you can take that heat and you can turn it into more energy. You can use thermoelectrics, turn some of that heat into electricity, some of the heat to radiate through the house. You can use it for heating and cooling and making fresh water. It's amazing. And you used water as fuel to heat the water and do all the rest.
We don't have fresh water but have a lot of sunlight. This could be the answer to at least getting some water free from the sun.
That's right.
So anyway.
So you could build emergency systems using this type of technology that were used out in the middle of the doggone desert. Wasn't a water spigot in sight. And if there was any kind of humidity out there in that desert whatsoever, you could use the temperature and temperature differences to create condensation that would do exactly that, put water in there. And then you could turn around and use that water as fuel to do it over and over until you're producing more water. So you could make systems that you could take over into third world nations, that they call them. I hate that terminology, but that's what they say, third world countries that can't get clean, fresh water. You can build a system that will pull water right out of the doggone air. Or you could have NASA go over there and make them a cloud, for Pete's sake. If there's a drought, it's because somebody didn't pay attention in science. You know, and if you're standing next to the doggone ocean and you die of thirst, it's because you didn't pay attention in science class.
This is my newest attempt at the HCAT. You can see it's getting hot here because I turned up 2 liters from it. I don't know if you can see that. A little bit of the oil from the pipe is still burning off. Let's look at the temperature here one last time. I'll probably get a flashback here soon. 315
degrees Fahrenheit, folks.
So, if you could get the flame to be sustained on the end of this, a small flame, I know that some other guys talking about the flower pot heater, you could use this section for the main heat and then burn off that extra hydrogen coming off the end underneath the flower pot heater, and you could basically pretty much use most of the energy there.
You could use it all.
There's a look at the water there and the hydrogen coming out the end there. And there we go, another little bit of pure water. Alright guys, hopefully that explained this well. I'll end this video. Really appreciate everyone for watching and all the people that are out there experimenting with this. Been a big help for me to be able to do this. And then the next video, I'll basically have what I was talking about, this with the heat sinks. And the heat sinks on this are pretty much going to be about 3 3/4 inch. So I found some aluminum tube that's 3 1/4 inch. I'll place the whole assembly inside of the aluminum tube, and I'll be able to blow some air across the fins of the heat sinks and be able to generate some real heat, hopefully, with this type of system. Alright guys, thanks for watching my video. Appreciate your comments.
Folks, go out there and support guys like that and gals like that. You find any lady researchers out there that do the same stuff? Somebody just posted in the chat room to please share the links. Scroll up in the chat room and you'll see them up there. They're right above where I said the Mad Science Show is live. You'll find them right up above. So they're in all four of the chat rooms on the Super Chat. But either way, support these folks. Go over and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Interact with them. Tell them Crazy Hair Shaziz sent you over there. If you're on listening on a cell phone right now, and you have access to a computer, or maybe parked safely or whatever, Google up HCAT HHO heater purification system. That's one of the links. Now the next one I want to get into is another one heat related. But folks, what I've been trying to say to everybody, as much grief as I've got caught by having people tell me they don't know what the heck I'm talking about, I paid attention in science class, all right? And so maybe I don't always have the proper terminology to lay it out that's like it's going to make somebody happy or something like that, I tell you, I know what I'm talking about. I paid attention in science. And I'm sharing these links with you. Other people are sharing information out here in the chat rooms with you. When I post these videos out there, go check them out. And if you like these specific researchers or the channel that you're looking at on there, subscribe to their channel. All right, that's how you, the person out there, can actually help. And if you like their video, thumb their video up or share it with somebody on one of your social medias. Look, NASA goes out there and grabs up the best of the best. And I'm telling you, if you grab the dream team in your specific neighborhood, if you grab the dream team up and you put a club together or something, you guys research and development kind of deal, you can solve so many problems. And the pieces of the puzzle, like I just talked about a piece of the puzzle where he could actually be able to use that excess hydrogen, because you can only get 2 hydrogen connected to 1 oxygen for a water molecule. The excess hydrogen wants to get away somewhere, so it's going to pressurize. Well, if he uses that in physics to his advantage, he'll have stored pressurized hydrogen, the excess, that can be reburned into the system. So you get great efficiency out of it. So with that said, I want to go to, since I'm talking about efficiency now, I want to go to this one right here. And the guy's speaking in German, but there's some translation going in there. I believe it's German. I could be wrong.
As this flame burns, it recombines hydrogen and oxygen back into water again in reaction to the flame. That means, here, it becomes water again. For about 4 years now, I've heated my house with this gas. People often bring this argument up. Why use electricity to create gas and heat with the gas? Why don't you just heat directly with the electricity? And so I researched to prove to myself whether I was right or not. Official verification is up to universities, of course. I can only verify things for myself. And it is this practical experience which gives me the knowledge and assurance to explain what I am doing. Only then can I talk effectively about the things I have researched and proven and had hands-on experience with. So I heated electrically for 2 years, just to refute the argument of why not to heat electrically. And I can tell you, the electricity bill went through the roof. Heating with conventional electric heaters and oil radiators? No way! Last year, I tried infrared heating panels. They are also electrically powered and are said to be very efficient, which they were to an extent. But they definitely weren't as efficient as my oxyhydrogen heater. So what does that mean? It is said that electricity is 100% efficient. Now what about my oxyhydrogen heater? If I save more money with it, then it must be even more efficient. Saving money means this. I usually have heating costs of about 1200 euro each year. But after 4 years of trial, my annual costs are down to 450 euro every year. So this isn't just my imagination anymore. This is factual proof. But imagine this. I only heated one single room, and this is what I built. I call it the sand heater. Nobody has seen this before.
It's a sogenannte Sandheizung.
I just have to connect the tube. This is a tube entirely filled with very fine sand. As it's a bit hot in the room already, so I won't keep it on long. First I have to ignite it from the top here. I've left the top open for you to see. Usually it is covered, so you wouldn't see anything.
Weil normalerweise, wenn das verbaut ist, sieht man nichts.
And it's hot already. Now, if I hold a glass above this, you can see condensation. This is escaping water vapor.
So. Dann sieht man, das wird feucht. Also was da rauskommt, ist nur Wasserdampf.
It is up here that the sand burns. It gets very hot and heats the entire tube up to 70 degrees Celsius. All that way up, it is very hot. You can feel that. And now you can hear a low popping sound, which is the platinated sand. This is simply platinum foil within the sand. I just have to preheat it, and at 60 degrees, the platinum starts to recombine the hydrogen and oxygen without any flame.
Wasserstoff und Sauerstoff wieder zu rekombinieren.
Now here we have the gas, all entirely flameless, just because of the platinum sand on top. It takes half an hour to heat the entire tube up, but when I switch it off, it stays hot for an hour longer. This winter, I used it for 16 hours every day in a 20 square meter room, 10 to 16 hours with 240 watts input. With a conventional electric heater, I would need 550, 600 watts for this. Here it is just 200 to 300 watts. Of course, it depends on the actual weather temperature. At minus 10 degrees Celsius, perhaps I'll need 320 watts. And if it's plus 6 degrees, perhaps only 180 watts. That is the sum total of my heating expenses.
Wenn's 6 Grad über Null hat, brauche ich nur 180 Watt. So in dem Schnitt, und so kommen dann die Heizkosten zusammen.
Now for a second thing, I don't want water vapor to leak into the room. Well, I must say there is very little water vapor here. Nothing compared to dampness you would need a dehumidifier to remove. Just a very, very minimal humidity output. So here I have designed a cover. It is closed down here to collect the condensing water, which drains off through this hose. The cover is mounted with 4 screws, so I can adjust the height.
Und diese Haube kann ich dann mit 4 Schrauben festmachen, dass das so hält. Und ich kann das in der Höhe auch verstellen.
This gives me a heater size of 1 meter with 3 square meters of emitting surface, and that is sufficient for one room. I still do this by hand. If you want to automate this, you'd have to install a heater coil instead of a Bunsen burner. Then at a push of a button, the coil would heat up the sand until it reached 60 degrees Celsius, and then the gas would start. And this is safe. Nothing can go wrong.
Eine Heizspirale einbaut und dann drücke ich auf den Knopf, die Heizspirale fängt an zu glühen, der Sand wird 60 Grad oben und das Gas kommt. Und es kann nichts passieren und da oben ist noch ein kleines Loch.
And here you see a small hole on top where if there was any unburnt gas, it could come out. Through entire winters this hasn't yet occurred.
Kann es da oben raus.
However, this escaping gas would be such a small amount that not even a hydrogen sensor would react. This gas even pours through concrete. It passes through everything. This is why storing this gas is very difficult, and why I don't like the idea of storing it. Because imagine a tank filled with thousands of liters of hydrogen and one spark. I wouldn't want to be anywhere close by then. Here the setup is different. I produce gas instantly, on demand. It is a constant circular flow. Now you may say, water is precious. But the water inside is not wasted at all. It stays within the circuit. And in the end, I have water again. So we have this natural product, water, that is disassociated, split apart, and then when it recombines and becomes water again, it produces heat.
Beim Rekombinieren, beim wieder zusammengefügt werden, erzeugt der Wärme.
It is a constant circular flow where the water is reused again. The same amount of water that is split apart is what I get as vapor output, and I can collect this and refill the dry cell.
Did you hear what he just said? The same amount of water that he put on to start is what he gets out in water vapor, and he can recollect it and he can reuse it as fuel. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. That's what we're told by the science class, right? So where does it go? It goes out there into nature. So all the inefficiencies, all the so-called waste, is only because you're not using it. You're not using it efficiently. I got a comment in there from A96069. Said, not sure my neighbors would be so helpful. A few are engineers and they think they know everything. And so, I think I missed the second portion of the comment. But anyway, I get that, my friend. We need to find a way around that. Try to find those who would be helpful. And Anon8069 also said, I haven't been to our Makers Local lately. Went several years ago and found a bunch of young people working on things that didn't interest me. Of course, a female old enough to be their mom was not warmly welcomed. Anyway, look. See, how we're getting out there and actually interacting with people might be the trick. You know, if you get a project that interests you, and you gather up a bunch of information, and you take it around, and you just share it with them, not as if you're trying to get them on board to working on it, but just listen to their response, you might find out that they'll say, well, you know, you could actually make that a little bit better by doing this over here. Of course, you're going to get those ones that'll try to say, well, yeah, I see what you're trying to say here, but that won't work because, and then you've got a information after being here, mad science that says, but what if we did this? That's how it works. You might actually get those ones that are, you know, think they know it all to actually help put some of the pieces of the puzzle, you know, in place. That's the whole thing. What I've been trying to show with my YouTube channel for a long time, even though I've done it in a crazy manner for a purpose, there is a method to my madness why I did my YouTube channel the way I did. But each one of those little anomalies that I kept showing are pieces of the puzzle. And once you get to looking into them and you think about, don't just look at it, what could I do with this? I mean, it's something like a ridiculously simple as a paper clip. You know, a little metal paper clip. You take that little metal paper clip and its initial purpose was to, you know, hold a couple pieces of paper together. But somebody with a little ingenuity thought, well, you know, I could do more with this little paper clip. And they bent it in different types of shapes and made things with it, even lock picks out of them. Get yourself out of some of the policeman's handcuffs with the right paper clip. You can't use the little cheap old metal ones because they bend too easy. But I'm not advocating you go out and get yourself in trouble, though. But nonetheless, there are multiple uses for multiple things. Repurposing things is one of the things that I really advocate. So when people start throwing things in the trash, like old electrical equipment and stuff like that, that's a resource for your group. Gather it up, you know, study it, see what actually what it was used for, see what useful parts are within it. And so a lot of your resources for your dream team, so to speak, or your makers groups, you can get for free. People throw stuff all the time. It's ridiculous. And even if they don't want to throw it away, chances are they'll probably sell it to you, you know, for pennies on the dollar of whatever it cost them, you know, or whatever currency you guys use. But nonetheless, don't give up on those brilliant ones in the other side, because people seem to like gravitate towards crowds. And so if they see you start drawing a crowd and you got some things going on there and people are getting input in there, they're going to want to try to put some input in there as well. But don't let the ones that think they know it all rule the show, so to speak. It has to be a joint effort between you and everybody. Everybody needs to put their egos down and their brains out on the table. Well, not necessarily your brains out on the table, but your ideas out there on the table. You know what I'm saying. And, you know, that's how the pieces of the puzzle get out there. And you guys can troubleshoot things. What I talked about here today is just a little tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of what our capabilities are with the technologies that we have available to us. You know, and I'd be more than happy to talk to, you know, if you get a group together and you guys want old crazy hair shiziz to come in here and give you some ideas, I'm more than happy to help you out with that. You know, that's what it's all about. NASA figured it out. All the corporations out there figured it out. Fuel industries, you name it. Any industry out there, the reason why they do so well is because they got you. They got the best of the best. And they gather up the best of the best that'll work for them, and they make them sign non-disclosure agreements, and they make them, you know, work hard and do all this research. And the technology, as opposed to being put out there, it's put out there on their time, not your time. And it should be your time, because if you're going to war over oil or resources, or paying high fuel cost or worried about your environment, it should be on your time. The technology is available. I've been trying to say this for a long time. That's why mad science is still mad science, because it makes me mad that 99.9% of the main scientists out there basically sold their soul to the devil, so to speak. Because if a guy like me can figure it out, I'm willing to tell you, this is the knowledge that's right there in front of your eyes. We have every single answer to resolve every single problem on this doggone planet. You know, and you know, if you want to talk about efficiency, let's talk about efficiency. If you want to talk about the world fixing the world, let's talk about fixing the world. There ain't no reason for nobody to have to drink dirty water in today's day and age. There ain't no reason for anybody to freeze to death or die of heat stroke or hunger or anything. We got all the stuff necessary to fix every single problem. You know, Stephen Gibbons, I got to shout him out again, because he put a links page together. If you scroll up in the super chat room, you'll find a button that says Stephen's resource page. Right above the radio players, you'll see it. Stephen's resource page. He took his time to gather up all kinds of research. So you go out there and just look around. Just check it out. You find something that's going to be beneficial to you, come back and let him know. Tell him thanks. Hey man, I never even knew that exists. Thanks a lot, Stephen. You know, this is what we do here. And if you find anything on here useful, share it with somebody else. If you like the podcast, when you hear these shows, rebroadcast it, repodcast it, share the links with somebody. Bring your friends here. Bring your dream team here. We actually have the capability, if we need to, we'll throw another chat room in here for specifically nobody but the dream team. All right? And once that's all said and done, then we'll get somebody over there while we're actually having the show. They'll actually be working. And when they have an aha moment, they'll jump in this other chat room and they'll say, hey, look what we found. Look what we figured out. Check this out. Try it out. You know, replicate it or whatever. That kind of stuff. So let's go on a little further with what he's got going on here, because there's some key points that he said in this video that I'd like to get.
I could automate this with pressure switches, temperature sensors, a thermostat, and a small control system. But there's not much to control. As soon as it reached the right room temperature, then I'd let the heater run at 40 watts. And if the temperature dropped, it would power it up again to 200 to 300 watts.
Und dann wenn sie wieder sinkt, dann schaltet wieder auf 200, 300 Watt.
It is not so important to me to be super efficient here. What we have to remember here are that these things are just the very first beginnings.
Ich habe vor zwei Jahren hat man mich eingeladen von der Uni Wien, von der BOKU.
2 years ago, I was invited to give a lecture at the University of Natural Resources and Life Sciences in Vienna, Austria. They were fascinated by my device. The only person who refused to enter the room was the professor himself. He was afraid something would explode. Later, they all wanted to take courses, so I built 8 dry cells with them. 3 months later, the professor retired, and his successor stopped the project. He wasn't interested in this topic at all.
Und dann 3 Monate später, was ist passiert? Der Professor ist in Ruhestand gegangen. Sie haben einen neuen Professor vor die Nase gesetzt bekommen und der hat kein Interesse daran. Und ich sage einfach, in einer Zeit, wo wir...
But in these times of high tides and crazy climate changes, I can't understand why people still ignore things like this.
Weil das Klima immer verrückter spielt.
Alright, so I'll pause this for a second, because you know, anytime I hear climate change, I'm going to get rowdy. Look... The guy's brilliant, he's got a great heart, but he's been told by science that climate change is man-made, and, you know, it sounds plausible and all that, but, you know, once again, if you didn't pay attention in science class, then you're going to be believing that we're destroying our planet with carbon dioxide is what they say, but it's actually carbon monoxide if you're burning what they call fossil fuels, which is another misnomer, but nonetheless... Let's give the devil his due, so to speak. All right? If they say that climate change is real, and if it's really causing all this terrible weather, then why are we having such a hard time of getting clean, renewable, alternative energies on the market when we have every single thing necessary to make the perfect efficient machines, perfect working in perfect harmony with nature? If you're worried about saving the trees, don't get out there and protest with a wooden stick and a paper sign. Go out and plant some trees. Encourage others to plant trees. It's that simple. And if you're standing next to the ocean and you're dying of thirst, then you didn't pay attention to what happened over in Dubai. That place over there, they not only built the land that their skyscrapers are on, but they built huge desalination plants. They make money off of sea salt. They make fresh water to drink, fresh water to take their showers. They pump this water all the way to the top of the building, and they use physics as it's coming down, the pipes and everything, to cool the doggone building down. So the laws of physics are not a hindrance. The laws of physics are not there to block the way. The laws of physics, if used properly, if you don't want to invoke lens effect, then don't invoke lens effect. Take the energy off in a different manner, and then you won't produce that second magnetic field that is then in turn acting as a brake on the armature. There's a reason why they use electromagnets and regenerative braking and so on, is that, they use that effect. They use that effect to make it more efficient. Let's see. Anon said, just because the climate is going through natural changes does not mean that humans are causing it and we are poisoning ourselves with our pollution. See? That's common sense. That's what happens in this these chat rooms. Common sense. That's it. It's as simple as the fishbowl effect, folks. If you put a little goldfish in a little bowl of water, and you're feeding that goldfish will pee and poo in that water until that water becomes so highly alkaline, so acidic that it will burn the gills of the fish, and the fish can't breathe, and the fish will go belly up. And then you'll have a moment of silence as you take your hat off and flush your goldfish down the commode. So, with that said, knowing that if there's no outside influence, if there's not some way to refresh that water to keep it clean, such as aquaponics, the way that aquaponics works, you circulate the water out of fishbowl into your plant, and then have your plant absorb that nutrients from that, which then in turn sends that water back down into the fishbowl after it's filtered out, and now your fish are getting fresh water, and your plants are getting fertilizer. So it's a symbiotic relationship between the water, the plant, the fish, and everything, and using physics and science to do what nature does. So if we want to not pollute our environment, then we have to understand what nature's been doing all along. Once you understand what nature's been doing and you mimic what nature's been doing, replicate that for your energy needs, then we can sit there and make these things. We're not polluting our environment. And if you understand the laws of thermodynamics and that everything has a thermal breakdown point, and you specifically engineer your machinery properly, then you would need very, very, very little oil to keep it lubricated. And certain materials, you wouldn't need any oil at all because they're self-lubricating because of what they're made out of. But nonetheless, if you use it properly, and you ensure that the weakest point of your machine or whatever is that point right there, that the weakest point of your thermal breakdown point, that's as far as you want the temperature on that thing to go. You don't want to go high enough that your weakest material can reach its thermal breakdown, because that's when the domino effect occurs. That's when things begin to fail. That's when, if you don't understand what's going on in the engine and you drive it too hard, you overpressurize the chambers and it forces the gaskets out the side, and then you got oil leaks, or you get it too hot and it overheats and your radiator explodes and now you got antifreeze everywhere. We can specifically engineer for just such an emergency, and we would know exactly when that engine should shut itself down to a lower operating range to allow it to balance itself back out so that it doesn't get damaged. We could build it. We could build engines that would run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year without polluting, without any kind of mechanical failure. Because if you think about what causes the failure in those, it's friction, it's heat, it's all these things that cause the any part of that machinery to reach its thermal breakdown point. And obviously, when a material gets softer, then the harder material that it's rubbing up against is going to win over the softer material. So if your your rings or your piston aren't up to snuff, and your piston gets too doggone hot, the ring material might eat through your piston, or your piston might eat through the ring material, vice versa, depending on which one has the lesser thermal breakdown. And that's using physics to your advantage. Once you understand that, and you understand how the engine itself is actually getting carbon, released. First, it's the timing of the fuel burn. It's the inefficiency of burning the fuel. It's the fact that you think you got to cram more fuel into the system in order to be able to run it faster when you shouldn't. You should use less fuel, because the faster those pistons are going up and down, the less time that you have to burn that fuel efficiently. That's how it gets out the exhaust. Otherwise, you'd get a clean burn, and you would get very little out of the exhaust. And when it comes down to the engine itself, part of the dark portion of your oil is because you got the oil so hot, it basically cooked the oil and it turned it a darker color. The other portion of is because the way the ring systems are built up, and not just diesel engines, but gasoline engines as well, is that because of that inefficient burn, and because of the design flaw in the ring system of the pistons, that carbon is able to escape and get down through the rings, and then basically it gets down into the oil, which causes it to get some carbon down in there, which then in turn, your oil, once your oil is full of carbon, all black and sooty, it's acting like sandpaper on your parts. Let's see, Anon said, your rings lose their temperature as thus lose the seal, resulting in loss of compression. There you go. That expansion and contraction. Heat expands, cold contracts. If you got a hotter temperature up here and that's at a lower temperature, there you go. See, right there, that's what I'm talking about. Just understanding what's going on in that engine gives you the answer on how to fix it to make it more efficient. See, these are the folks we need here. That was a comment from Anon. Let's see, is that 80? My glasses must be clogged up. Yeah, it's 8069. Look, brilliant comments. Brilliant. And I love it. So anyway, let's get back to this.
Einfach sagt, ja, lassen wir das links liegen. Wir werden dann schon einmal was finden in 30ern. Es ist einfach für mich unvorstellbar, oder? Und jetzt kommt der Punkt, ich habe mit dem angefangen. Die Effizienzwerte.
Even with minimal trials, I have already gained decent efficiency. We're talking efficiency of 96 to 97% here.
Es gibt Leute.
There are people in the US and Australia who have even utilized this with resonance methods.
Elektrolyse betrieben, in einem sogenannten Resonanzverfahren.
They save much more energy by using natural resonance, and they made a lot of gas with almost no energy input at all.
Fast keine Energie, viel Gas erzeugt haben. Und das ist ein...
Oh, I got to pause this for a second because I misstated earlier. The rings lose their temper. That's the word I was, but I went on to temperature. Never mind. Sorry about that. But same concept. That when they lose their temper is because they got too doggone hot. But nonetheless, the expansion and contraction difference between parts is another reason why, if you understand the physics of the laws of thermodynamics, you can send the heat energy where you want it to go. Knowing how, you know, it's just like electricity or water, you know. Water, you know, uses pipes, plumbings, different sizes to regulate pressure and volume. And, you know, electricity, same exact thing. You know, thicker gauge wires as opposed to thinner gauge wires. You get more volume down a thicker gauge wire, which means you're going to get more current down a thicker gauge wire. You get more pressure down a thinner gauge wire, which means you're going to higher voltage down a thinner gauge wire. So that's basically understanding the physics. So within that problem, that would be because it lost its temper, which now it's not as sturdy anymore and can actually cause problems. You know, your rings, you know, can actually break. It split instead of having one split in there for the ring expansion every time that piston or every time that combustion occurs. Those rings actually expand out, which go down the cylinder to try to seal up that compression. But in the process, you'll have either two or three ring system, and depending on what machine that your engine you're running, that there's two little splits inside there, and eventually carbon can make it through those two little splits. There's ways and materials by which we could actually use that have a high thermal breakdown, but they're basically a solid ring. And as long as that material isn't harder than the cylinder walls, then and the temperature's right and it's properly lubricated, those rings would never fail, and you would never lose compression on it. So there is a solution to every single problem out there. So let's keep going.
Ein Mensch hat das entwickelt.
One man even powered his car with it.
Er lebt nicht mehr.
He's dead now.
Es ist einfach so,
the global players do not want this. So all we can do is tinker on a small scale.
Und darum können wir das eigentlich nur im Kleinen machen, oder?
What do you call this machinery?
It's got a misleading name. It's called a dry cell. But as you can see, it's not dry at all. There is water inside. We have to distinguish it from earlier wet cells with two electrodes and a water bowl.
Aber dieses Wort Trockenzelle ist einfach nur zur Unterscheidung. Es gibt auch sogenannte Nasszellen. Da sind die Elektroden einfach in einem Wasserbad angeordnet und produzieren.
Does this have anything to do with nuclear energy?
No, nothing at all.
Ja,
I purchased a Geiger counter from NATO Times, still fully functional. It showed nothing, nada.
Null, null. Ich hab dann auch andere.
I then wanted to check for microwaves and got a microwave detector along with this Geiger counter.
Da habe ich mir ein Mikrowellenmessgerät besorgt und den Geigerzähler abgeschaut. Ja, die Mikrowelle.
I tried it on my microwave oven, and there was indeed a small leakage. I would say you can safely use a microwave oven for anything. Just.
All right, let me point something else out here, because he's talking about microwaves and he's talking about radiation, and he's saying there's not a problem, and he even says you can use a microwave for anything except for, you know, cooking your food, because microwaves actually destroy the quality of your food. But, you know, that's all science, all right? But the folks out there that like to try to make it look like, for example, the nuclear scare scam video by Galen Windsor. Check that video out sometime. It'll make you look at nuclear energy as slightly different. But nonetheless, not trying to advocate for nuclear energy, but if you actually pay attention to what's going on out there, you might very well find out that the mainstream industry likes to use fear technologies, fear information in order to try to convince you that certain technologies aren't safe, when in fact they might very well be a whole lot safer than you can possibly imagine. Nonetheless, that's what they do in order to ensure that their dream team makes them a lot of money. You need your dream team to resolve all these problems, because this technology is already available. All right, when they get new technology, it comes out on their time. But all the information necessary to be innovative and produce your own technology, it's already ready. It's been around. We have every single piece of the puzzle necessary to give the world free energy. No ifs, ands, or buts. And I would challenge anyone out there who believes themselves to be so highly educated in science to come out there and go head to head with old crazy Shaziz and tell me where I'm wrong. Because I understand the laws of physics. I understand science. I understand how things work, and I see it mechanically, and that's how I try to explain it mechanically. So maybe my terminology isn't up to standard to what you have been indoctrinated into believing is the truth. But when you look at what I'm saying, when I say things like I equate how water works and how electricity works, and I sit there and I tell you that if you got a large pipe, you can get a large volume of water through that pipe. If you got a large copper wire, you can get a lot of electricity down that wire, a lot of volume, a lot of current. All right. Now, if you take and you drop those large pipes down into smaller pipes, you just produced a restriction that now the energy still wants to flow, the water still wants to flow, but you just shrunk down and produced resistance. All right. And what that's going to do is ramp up the pressure, and on not just the water side, but on the other side. And that point where you connect those two together, if you get too much volume trying to go into that smaller hole, then you'll have a failure right there, unless you understand what's going on physically with what you just did. If it can't handle the pressure, it's either going to get hot on the electrical side and burn that wire in half because you're pushing too much current to it, or it's going to overpressurize that coupler between the large pipe and the small pipe, and it's going to burst, and there you go. The same exact concept. It's because I understand it mechanically that I can explain it with simplicity, and that simplicity is what really gets on people's nerves who are electrical engineers or mathematicians or physicists or whatever, all these high-tech terminologies with the, you know, the big name tag on it, and maybe the piece of paper that goes on the wall. All right, well, look, I tell you what. You need to attend the University of Mad Science. If you scroll up there in the chat room and you look right above Stephen's resource page link, there's another button that says attend the University of Mad Science. All right, now if you want a degree where you can go out there and speak with confidence like I speak with confidence, because I know what I'm talking about, go see if you can become get a diploma from the School of Mad Science. All right, come back, tell me how you fared on the test, and take it as many times as it takes for you to get a diploma. Once you graduate, we'll throw a bash here for you, put your name on that diploma, print it out, put your name on it, put it in a beautiful plaque, stick it on the wall, and share it proudly that you graduated from the School of Mad Science, all right, the University of Mad Science, all right, there you go. So you too can have a degree in science, the real science, not the mainstream shenanigans that they like to pass off as real science. All right, let's go a little further here.
Not for cooking, because it destroys its nature. Outside the oven, there was no big emission, perhaps 0.4 watts below the oven. Then I tried it on my mobile phone and just called myself. And you know what the detector said about my mobile? More than 200 milliwatts. That is what we hold against our head dozens of times a day. We've become used to them and assume they won't do any harm. But that amount is really dangerous. But with the dry cell here, not even a hint of microwave emission. Zero.
Über zwei verdienen mit Öl und Gas.
Here I have a catalytic converter. It works in the same way my sand heater does.
What if I inhale this gas?
Last year there was a 76-year-old man attending my lecture. He had already built himself this type of cell. He was ridden with arthritis, rheumatism, all that. He inhaled this oxyhydrogen gas every day, oxygen and hydrogen. He lost his arthritis, his joint problems. He became fit as a fiddle. Here we have 30% pure oxygen. We don't have that much in the air.
30% reiner Sauerstoff, das haben wir in der Luft nicht.
I preheat it, just like I did before.
Und jetzt mache ich die Flamme aus.
Now I turn off the flame. It makes a popping noise and I start the gas output again. Now, can you see that? It starts to glow. There is no flame at all. Do you see that? Now the flame has come back. For this catalytic converter, I would need a very specific air gas mixture, but I can't produce this right here.
Und das kann ich jetzt da hier nicht erzeugen, so auf die Schnelle, nicht?
Can you see this?
Kann man sehen. Also es ist nur das Gas. Keine Flamme. Ich kann dahin. Es ist keine Flamme. Es ist nur das Gas, was diesen Katalysator jetzt zum Glühen bringt.
With my sand heater, I measured temperatures of up to 750 degrees Celsius. That's quite useful already, right? I also tried heating with catalytic converters, but it's difficult to provide the perfect air mixture.
Ich habe auch versucht so zu heizen, aber es ist relativ kompliziert. Man muss da eben Luft-Gas-Mischung.
I don't want to use the air mix.
Okay, in case you missed that, he has actually got a little smaller catalytic converter, and he's basically heating it up with the hydrogen coming out the other end of it.
Mixtures right here, as we would get small quantities of nitric oxide. But here, when I burn pure oxyhydrogen, there is no exhaust, just pure water vapor, nothing else.
HHO verbrenne ist null Abgase außer Wasserdampf.
I think this is the only flame that burns underwater.
This is the one I wanted you to take a peek at right here. This is where he's talking about it burning underwater. So let me kind of rewind it just a hair here. Hopefully I don't go too far.
I also tried heating with catalytic converters, but it's difficult to provide the perfect air mixture. I don't want to use the air mixtures right here, as we would get small quantities of nitric oxide. But here, when I burn pure oxyhydrogen, there is no exhaust, just pure water vapor, nothing else.
HHO verbrenne ist null Abgase außer Wasserdampf.
I think this is the only flame that burns underwater.
Die einzige Flamme, die unter Wasser brennt. Das haben Sie auch noch nicht gesehen, oder?
I'm sure you've never seen this, a flame that burns underwater. Of course, as you know, it contains enough oxygen for standalone burning. Oxygen and hydrogen, that's all it needs for burning underwater. Now watch as I submerge the flame. Can you see this? The flame is underwater now.
Ich bin mit der Flamme im Wasser.
I pull it out again and submerge it again. The water is getting warm.
Das Wasser wird warm. Die Flamme müsste ja
For maximum heat distribution, the flame needs to touch solid matter.
Alright. He's got a torch. It's under the water. The water's getting warm. And he just said that for maximum efficiency, for maximum dispersion of the heat, then you'd need a piece of metal. So if you had stainless steel bar inside that jar of water, and you had that hydrogen hitting that stainless steel, it would transfer that heat to the stainless steel and to that water and make that even more efficient. So you got the capability of actually making a water heater system that would run on such a small amount of wattage compared to what the resistive loads do now. Go back and look at my redneck hot tub video. I used the coffee pot element to heat the water tub. I've already explained that. But the efficiency of that wasn't nowhere near what it could be with using this type of technology and understanding how this energy is actually transferring it and using the best materials available to make a super efficient water heater. In your house, your furnace, whether it be gas or electric, is inefficient. There's a lot of waste in the whole process. Even though some of them call themselves energy savers, they're inefficient. So anything that you have to do with heat in your house is being used inefficiently. Unless you understand the physics that heat rises and cold air falls, you put the heater vent in the floor and the air conditioner in the ceiling. But nonetheless, if you got that figured out, you're more efficient than the other guy. So by taking everything you've learned here today and re-engineering some of the existing products out there, the heating elements such as old tungsten element light bulbs are still good. And actually, they're just as efficient as the others if you understand how to use them properly. But we'll get into that later. So, everything that uses heat is what costs you the most on your electricity. Any resistive load that you've got is going to cost you to have to use more power. And they know this. So the more efficient your house becomes, the less you have to pay them. So you as the average Joe, you start developing hydrogen technology like this is just one example. Well, there's many ways to do this. For example, and I guess I'll go ahead and go into it. Nichrome wire is used for heating elements because basically it's nickel chromium wire, and tungsten wire is what they use for making heating elements. They one goes in one type of heater element and the other one goes in other types of heater element. But they resist current flow. But this same exact material at the right voltage and the right frequency will get just as hot. Just as hot as if you had a lot of current going to it. Hold on. Looks like somebody's ringing the bell. How you doing, Ted? We're live.
Great, Zeus. How you doing today?
Oh, pretty good. Right in the middle of a podcast. Do you want to hang in there? Can you hear it?
Yeah, I'm in. I'll sit back and listen.
All right.
Thank you.
Anyway, before I go back to it, what I was trying to say, if you understand the physics of how energy is actually functioning, instead of using a lot of current to run nichrome wire as a heating element, you use the proper frequency at the proper voltage, you can get it to do the same exact thing. And I can prove that to you later, but right now I'm on the roll right here. The same thing with tungsten element. Actually, if you go and you look at one of my videos, I can't remember which one it is, but I used a tungsten element, I think it was a halogen headlight lamp that was burnt out. It wouldn't work on standard 12 volts anymore because the element's broken half. I hooked it to a 20,000 volt oil burner igniter and used it as a spark gap. Well, the light bulb lit up. So tell me how that worked, and then we'll have a conversation about it.
Gegenstand, der Feuer im Face ist.
In this way, I have already reached 90% efficiency. Have a check. You can feel it is already warm, and I wasn't yet at full power here. Okay, now the power supply is running at full power. This makes a really long flame. It reaches up to... Oh, I get burned here. You can't see the flame anymore, but it stretches to perhaps here? Here, I'm already burning myself. And this is really just a mini thing. It's not a very big thing at all, but a cell like this still produces double the amount required. So to heat a room, it only needs to run at half power. And with four cells like this, I could heat an entire house. Actually, I thought I could show you all of this outside. Because I can also inflate balloons with this gas. They will ascend to the sky. All of this is nothing other than water. Split apart in a balloon, and up it goes.
How many...
Alright, so... If you've been listening in since the beginning of the show, been talking a lot about water and hydrogen technology, you got one guy who was using water to heat water. You got another guy who was using water to heat sand, to heat his room, to save himself energy. Then this video right here, he fills up a balloon with hydrogen and you can watch it float to the air. So that's another use. There's so many doggone uses for it. There's health benefits to water. There is health benefits to hydrogen. If you understand how nature's functioning, and you can understand mechanically what it is that I'm explaining to you, you got before your very eyes every single answer necessary to give the world exactly what it is that they claim they wanted all along. Energy is free. Electricity is free. It's all free. If you just get past these knuckleheads out there that keep on trying to debunk everything under the sun, to try to use the laws of thermodynamics improperly, to sit here and try to tell you why it's not possible, if you could just get past the terminology perpetual motion, over unity, or zero point, and clearly and only use free energy, because if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough because you're surrounded by it. Water is the most stable molecule on the planet. And if you know what to do with water, you can use it for hydraulics, because we know a liquid can't be compressed. You can boil that liquid into gas and then compress it. You can crack that liquid into its two components, two hydrogens and one oxygen. You got one implosive, one explosive, and an electrical charge release in the separation and the recombination of the two. And on top of that, when you burn it, then it turns around and recombines on the other side. So you didn't get rid of none of it. All you did was use the energy releases and the physics of what was going on while the process was occurring. He said earlier in the video, in this particular one, that his whatever water he started off with is the same amount of water vapor that he got out the other end. The guy in the prior video that was using water to heat water, he used a little mini doggone hydrogen cell. He used that process to crack the water into its two components, burn the water, send the water up into a catalytic converter, cause the materials to interact, the catalyst inside the catalytic converter to interact with the hydrogen and oxygen, producing more heat, got it up to over 300 degrees, send that those gas fumes, those exhaust fumes, out through a condenser, a copper coil, cooled it back down, turned it back into water, gave itself enough extra hydrogen in the process for pressure to push the water out without a water pump and spill water all over his doggone table. And then was saying that if he could only take that extra hydrogen and get it to burn consistently, and then I said that if he would have talked to me, I would have told him to put that in a container where the water was going into the bottom, So now you have the hydraulic being able to push that that water to fill that container, plus the hydrogen, which is lighter than water, will still make it through, go up inside there, pressurize the upper portion of the container with pure hydrogen that he can then, in turn, once the pressure was up high enough, burn it consistently. So he had energy in every doggone direction just with this little process that he got going on. Ted, did you have a question?
No, I thought you might ask me a question, then I realized it was rhetorical.
Oh yeah, I'm asking the world a question.
So yeah, yeah, I got you. I was here.
Yeah, let's see. The vent placement depends. Oh, this is Anon 8069. The vent placement depends on if you have a crawl space or a house in on concrete slab. Okay. Basically, earlier I was saying if you put your heating in the floor and your air conditioning on it, more efficient. In some buildings, the way that, like if you got a double-wide trailer and it's sitting on blocks or whatever and it's got a concrete deal, it's obvious that you got a situation now where that isn't going to be as efficient as it could be unless you get some insulation factor going on in there. But if you took that same exact scenario and you put a double wall, double pane windows in your wall, all the way around there is your skirting. Now you got a dead air space in between there, and that cold air can't transfer through to the deal. So you could take an existing mobile home and make it more efficient just by adding a second layer of skirting. You know, off-centered from each holes or whatever, you know, or make it so that you could open it for ventilation during the summertime, but during the wintertime, you can close this thing off. So if you've got a dead air space in between, there's the same physics that apply in dual-pane windows or triple-pane windows, makes it so that that dead air space is the perfect insulation because that heat can't transfer through that. And so that means that underneath even a mobile home trailer, that will be more efficient and let that heat go rise up into your house. And then, you know, on the opposite side of the spectrum, the air conditioning on the other side, you know that your roof produces heat. And so if you can get that heat out of your roof, you can use that heat as energy for one. But the same insulation factor would be the deal there. And if you got your vent going through your rafters and then down into your ceiling, and then you got enough insulation up above that, that heat that's on top of there can't transfer through. But if you made a second barrier, a dead air space in between your insulation that's over your vent and the heat that's developed in your attic from the sun beating down on your roof, then you can send that heat out of the roof through the vents, but not transfer it through to your air conditioner, thus forth making your air conditioner even more efficient. And by using the laws of thermodynamics, like I said, you can turn that excess heat energy built up in. There's a reason why they put vents in the roof, because the sun beating down, if you didn't have no vents in there, the temperature difference would cause condensation and rot your rafters out, not to mention the fact that if there was no way for that pressure to escape from that expansion of that heat in there, your roof would blow off the top of your house. So, it's simple. It's ridiculously simple, folks. So, let's move on a little bit. I think there was a couple more things in here that I wanted to get to that this guy's talking about.
What do you need for heating a house?
That depends on its insulation. Initially, I thought I'd need a cubic meter of gas per hour, which is a lot. That's 17 liters per minute. But currently, I now think I can heat my house with 600 liters per hour.
Und sage, ich traue mir zu, dass ich mit 10 Litern in der Minute, also mit 600 Liter, das ist nicht einmal ein halber Kubik.
Look. Insulation is the key. If you can insulate your house, basically imagine this. Imagine you could shrink yourself down and put yourself inside an igloo cooler and then heat the inside of that igloo cooler with your little electric heater. if you was inside that igloo cooler and you was heating yourself, heating that space inside there, the insulation factor in igloo coolers, and the reason why igloo coolers are so well sold is because it keeps your beer and ice cool in the summertime so that you can go out and have your barbecue and your party. So Igloo figured out the laws of physics. They took that doggone cooler, and you can either do one of two things. They have a cooler out there that has a Peltier element in there that if you want to keep stuff warm inside there, you turn the battery on and it'll keep it warm inside there. If you want it opposite, it has it set up so that the same exact system will put cool air into that cooler. So just like a thermos, you put cold water in the thermos, it'll stay cold for a long period of time. You put hot water in there to stay long for a long period of time. That's because the people who make thermoses understand the laws of physics. Alright, now if you build your house and you want your house to be so doggone incredibly energy efficient, you go out and look and see what everybody else did. They sell you these windows, triple pane glass, super efficient. Alright, well, it's super efficient because they know the physics of that dead air space in there. So you build a wall, which is your inside of your house, you build a dead air space, and then you put your insulation in there. So you got insulation in the wall that you got on the inside of your house, you got a dead air space, and then you got the insulation on the outside of the house, and you got a super efficient, you're living in a thermos. So when you cool it down, it don't take much to cool it down. If you don't turn the air conditioner off, you'll have snot sickles on your face. I know that's kind of disgusting, but it's true. So, and if it's just the opposite, if you're trying to heat the house up, you'll have to turn the doggone heater down. Go look at what nature did. You go stand in any cave. If it's not a gaping hole at the cave entrance where there's a lot of wind blowing inside that thing, caves will stay at approximately around 60, 65 degrees all year around, no matter how hot it is outside, no matter how cold it is outside. Because it's not being pummeled by sunlight, and because it's not having heat gush up inside there. There's a reason why they said the caveman run up in the cave. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But just the insulation alone in your house could save you so much money, it wouldn't be funny. So, best case scenario, you can build your house from start to finish, but not everybody can afford to do that. So we got to figure out ways to find easier and cheaper and more efficient ways to run electricity. And that's what I'm trying to show you everybody here. What this guy has done right here, using the knowledge of, like if you think about that sand that's inside there, that sand will absorb heat and it'll hold heat for a while. It's kind of like when you go to the beach and you're walking barefoot on the beach after the sun's been beating down on it. That stuff gets hot because it has a little bit of moisture trapped in it, and that moisture's getting hot, the water's getting hot in there, and it's holding it. That doggone, it's heating up the glass, which essentially is the sand, you know? And your feet get hot, so you gotta have you some flip-flops to run across the beach, otherwise you'll be hot-footing it across the beach. So, let's see, Anon8069 said, have a south-facing house, plant deciduous trees on the east and west side and evergreens on the north. That's great. That's brilliant. So you're going to get a little bit of evaporated cooling from the moisture that comes off the tree leaves off of one, and you're going to get some shade off of the other. So there you go, man. That's brilliant. So anyway, Ted, you got any ideas, brother?
Yeah, man, I've got a lot of ideas. What kind you want to hear about?
Well, right now, I'm just trying to catch my breath.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going back to motors. I'm working with the alternator as a brushless motor.
Cool.
Or as a permanent three-phase motor. Looking at some of these people that are using alternators and using electronic, speed controllers to test those alternators as motors. I believe that the alternator could be used as a primary mover.
Yeah, you had mentioned earlier that you wanted to be able to light light bulbs What's the green?
Well, I mean, my number one goal is got this old little greenhouse way out back, the old barn. And it's going to cost way too much money to run no copper or aluminum out there and a whole other breaker and all that just to put resistive blow heating there. My basic operation is to get a 30 amp hot water heater running in that greenhouse off the grid so it can sit there and pump hot water, circulate around, and if it gets too hot, dump it to a dump zone and basically be able to feed myself.
Yep, I get it. Well, brother, I think that we can help each other out on that deal.
All right.
You know, certain types of artificial lighting are good for plants. So you could actually have artificial lighting and, you know, be able to generate heat as well using some plasma technologies and some of these other. When I listened to you talk about the brushless motors, depending on which RPM you spin those brushless motors at, they will produce high voltage AC at high frequencies. And so, if you ever see all the Tesla coil videos where they're holding a fluorescent light bulb out in front, out in the air, and those waves are actually vibrating at such a frequency that they're actually lighting that light bulb up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you can do the same exact thing. You can send that frequency right down a wire. And whether it be a brand new bulb or even a burnout bulb, it will still light that light bulb. All right, and at certain frequencies, you will actually energize that. Inside of every fluorescent bulb, there's just a little tiny bit of mercury, but you energize that into quite literally the plasma state with that high voltage that you're putting in there. Just like a mercury vapor bulb. And then infrared or whatever light spectrum's coming off of that is actually what basically gets that phosphorescent coating inside that bulb to give off the type of light that you can actually see. So when these bulbs that when they go bad, when the tungsten elements fail, those are like the heaters inside those bulbs. Those bulbs aren't dead. They can still be lit up. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So, with that knowledge and taking that brushless DC motor, if you spin one of them things up over its normal operating RPMs, which is, whenever you put the power to it, it will go, let's say, 1,500 RPMs. All right, let's just hypothetically, we'll just say it. Putting power to it, it will go 1,500 RPMs.
Can we say 6,000?
Yeah, well, either way, doesn't matter. Funny. The faster you spin that thing, the higher the frequency, the higher the voltage will come out the other one in line. So if you had an electric motor generator, and you had an electric motor that would spin at 6,000 RPMs, and you're using the second one in line for specifically producing high voltage, not the current, or the watts or the amperage like your normal generator, all you're going to do is spin that thing up to as high voltage as you can get, the highest output you can get on the other side. Now you're not going to have enough current out there to run that light bulb like it would be, but you're not going to be running that way anymore. That same amount of power will still light up that light bulb. You see what I'm saying?
Even though it's three phases,
the light bulb.
No, the alternator, it'll be like a three-phase electricity unless you leave the diodes in there.
Yeah, it really don't matter. You just take two wires off of it and, or actually take all three of the wires. Take one wire, hook it to one end of the bulbs, the second wire to the next row of bulbs, and the third wire to the next row of bulbs, and then take on the opposite end of the light bulb and ground it to the earth. That high voltage, high frequency will travel down there and it will light up every one of those light bulbs. Did I lose you?
Well, you didn't lose me. I'm listening, but I'm looking at it in my brain.
Yeah. So, if you've ever grabbed a hold of the wrong wire on one of those three phase and then made the mistake and touched the ground, you get the creds chalked out of you, even though you weren't touching two wires. You ever notice that?
Okay. Makes sense. Right.
Yeah, because you got electron flow going in all those wires. and that electrons are looking for a path to ground. You just made a path to ground. And so that's what I was doing with that Beckett oil burner igniter. I was using one leg off the Beckett oil burner igniter, and then I had an earth ground on the opposite side of my system. So I shot that it was about 10,000 volts per side, so it's 20,000 volts. So essentially I was doing what I was doing off of 10,000 volts, high frequency, high voltage, sending it through a burnout light bulb that was lighting up because it was actually able to leap across the gap, and then going through all my coil system, pulsing my coils, and then down to the earth ground. That was its entire path. And that's how I was getting all those things to do what they were doing. So, even bad light bulbs, I was producing radiant energy with one where I could hold the fluorescent bulb up there, and I was a simulated ground. And then I was shooting the other through wiring system down to the earth ground, so it had a ground. So there you go. Did you ever see, I can't remember which video it was. I'll have to think about it. But there was a video where I actually showed that I unplugged a charging system away from the regular power cord, threw the power cord away, and then took that same plug and stuck one of the legs off the plug to my earth ground, and it lit up just as good as it did when it was plugged into the wall.
Was that the one called Dumbass?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
That's because somebody told me that. Basically, that's what they called me and said that's what I was, right? Anyway.
Yeah.
Just go check it out. Let me play a little bit more of this podcast for a second, because I think there was one more thing I wanted him to say on here.
Das ganze Haus warm kriegen kann.
Over how long?
To keep it warm, 10 liters per minute, that is 600 liters an hour. I need about 1.4 kilowatt hours of electricity energy per hour for this. That's not very much.
Also sind das 600 Liter, und dafür brauche ich dann, für 10 Liter brauche ich dann circa, ja, 1,4 Kilowattstunden an Energie in der Stunde. Oder das ist nicht viel.
When I compare this with heating electrically, then I would need much more. In winter, I heated 3 rooms with infrared panels, consuming a total of 4,000 kilowatt hours of electricity. And naturally, when I heat with wood, then I need 18,000 kilowatt hours during the winter for my house, for 6 rooms, 120 square meters. But it's hard to imagine things when I talk about watts, kilowatt hours, or power. So perhaps I can explain it in clearer terms. We know that 1 kilo of beech wood has 4.2 kilowatt hours of heat energy. Now I can heat a room with much less than that with my sand heater. This would be equivalent to 400 grams of beech wood over 24 hours. And I don't think anyone could heat an entire room that frugally, using just 400 grams of beech wood and keeping the place warm for 24 hours.
Okay, there you go.
That's the efficiency I have.
Yeah, he's talking about incredibly efficient. All right, he's got like 96% efficient what he's achieving with his system. But even if you're burning firewood, if you understand what's going on when you're burning that firewood, and you understand that if you're looking at the furnace that you're going to use right there. Alright, if you have the majority of that furnace, including the chimney itself, inside your house, you're going to be much more efficient than the individual that has a huge pipe outside the house. So, if you understand what's going on there, and different types of materials and their thermal breakdown point, when they become dangerous and it could actually catch fire because the chimney pipe got to a certain temperature, you could engineer a wood-burning stove that would be 100% efficient. That's including the exhaust. Because what's going out that exhaust is incredible. When you burn firewood, you're producing ash. And that ash is another useful product. When you're burning that firewood and not all of it's totally gone, it builds up what they call creosote up inside your doggone chimney. Basically a secondary fuel. And if you understood how that functioned, then that would bring you into the realm of Ted, do you remember what they call them smokeless heaters? Ah, doggone it. I can't remember right now, right off the top of my head, what the name of those are. Rocket stoves.
Oh, yeah, I love rocket stoves.
Yeah, basically you can recirculate that excess gas, the smoke coming out the chimney, right back in and reburn that fuel as well. And then you can take that heat that's being generated that's actually escaping out of the stack, and build a capture system for that as well to take that heat and guide that down to wherever you want it for whatever purpose that you need it. The only thing that you need to remember in that process is that chimney has to be able to breathe. So as long as you got that chimney where it's able to breathe, whether it be through some sort of, like your carburetor in your car, like your air breather in your car, the air fuel mixture, you get that figured out, then you can take all the energy from that firewood and you can reuse every bit of that, making that wood burning stove so incredibly efficient. And using everything else that we were talking about, you're not wasting heat out of gaps in the wall of your house, you're not throwing the heat out the ceiling. You got 90% of the stove function of portion inside your house, so all the heat that's coming off of that wood is staying inside your house. Any little bit that might go out the chimney, you can redirect into some sort of thermal heat exchanger, where you could take on one side of it, use it to build up condensation for water, or on the opposite side of it, where you can use it for thermoelectrics, so that you can use that excess heat to do the Seebeck effect and produce electricity while that heat is escaping from the same doggone chimney. Now, if what I'm saying to you don't make no doggone sense, then I guess you just didn't pay attention in science class. Now, I've been listening to mad science, that's for sure. Because you know that every time you use energy, you get a reaction. And all the losses that they talk about usually end up being due to friction, vibration, heat, all these different things, resistance. Those are all things that are all working hand in hand. The heat is not your enemy if you know how to use it properly. And if you design the internal combustion engine properly, then you only have heat where you need heat. That gasoline engine doesn't have to get hot. It doesn't have to run at 160 to 180 or 220 degrees Fahrenheit. You can engineer that same doggone engine to be warm to the touch when you come up there, because the only heat involved in the system is needed in the cylinders for the combustion portion of it. Then the exhaust out there, you can turn around and re-guide that heat wherever you want it. So there aren't no losses in the system unless you're just giving it up willingly. It's as simple as that. So, let's see what else we got here.
One solid cubic meter of wood has 1,500 kilowatt hours of energy. I need about 12 to 14 cubic meters per year. This is what any other wood burner would consume on average.
Yeah, hold on.
And the point is that wood is 4 to 5 times cheaper than electricity.
Yeah, what you got?
I was just thinking my buddy has the wood-burning stove connected to a boiler.
Yep, so he's heating his water.
He pumps it through PEX line around his house, and it's like an inferno.
Yeah.
There's people, so he's out cool at this point.
There's people right now that put it, when they're building the foundation of their garages, they will actually run PEX lines up underneath the foundation, back and forth, and they circulate the water, hot water, through the floor, and you get that rise, that heat.
Do they need to put an insulation board under their pour so that it, like, keeps it from going down into the ground?
What, the heat?
Yeah.
No, heat rises. The only thing you need, if you put insulation under the PEX, like let's say I got a wooden floor. It's obviously that PEX isn't going to catch fire from the water, but that water is going to be able to transmit heat, right? Because heat rises. Right. So if I took PEX line and I ran it under the floor, back and forth underneath my floor, and then on the outside of that, where, you know, the air would come up underneath the crawl space of your home, then I insulate, you know, with some thick foam or whatever good insulation I can get on the top of that. You could even use that same process in regular homes, which would be a plus too, because if you had your plumbing that was going up through your rafters or through the floor of your house, going to like all your different bathrooms, normally you got to run heat tape on these trailers, otherwise it'll freeze up and break your pipes in the winter time. But using that system like you were talking about, you could use the water heater as the way to keep enough heat underneath there to keep those pipes from freezing even in the dead of winter. And all you have to do is insulate on the opposite side where the cold air is going to be.
My buddy that's a plumber told me that in these hotels and stuff, the way you get hot water all the time is they just keep the hot water circulating in the line so it's always hot.
Yeah.
And he said usually that's more efficient actually in the long run than just having your hot water sitting there and having to run so much of it to get it hot.
That's
He's
right.
Like in the long, he's like actually having that circulation ends up being a money saver. And I'd have to try it to really believe that, but I could see it. I see it being possible. If it was in a good insulation area, if it was like running through like cold walls of your house, I don't think that would be efficient. But if you had it, you know, insulated a little bit, then I could see it being incredibly efficient. And if you are doing what you're saying and kind of keep it close by your cold lines so that they're protected, then, you know, is that what you're kind of saying? Running that hot water around with your cold lines and then they won't freeze.
Yeah, just like the redneck hot tub. I use a coffee pot element to run the water. So you could actually make you a pumping system with a coffee pot element and just a little cheapo electric pump to circulate water through that PEX tubing that, you know, you could actually tape the PEX tubing right to your water pipes, you know, if you didn't want to go through the whole floor process, and just circulate warm water through there all the time. That heat would transfer through that pipe and keep the doggone pipe from freezing up, and you wouldn't have to use a resistive element such as heat tape in order to keep that from doing that. But what you were saying about leaving the hot water heater running all the time, electric one, it would be more efficient because you don't have to take the time to cool it down. It only needs so much electricity to maintain it. So that element will shut itself down at certain points, but the water temperature in the tank will never drop down below a certain point. You see what I mean?
Well, yeah, definitely.
Therefore, saving you more electricity.
Well, you know, I've looked into hot water furnace boiler style setups that run on induction heat, like your redneck hot water heater.
Yeah.
And I found one, and it was reasonably priced, and it runs on like 8 kilowatts. You know, I mean, you've still got to hardwire in like a 50 amp line to it, and I'm like, this just doesn't seem necessary. Like, why would anybody have an induction furnace that was so inefficient? The purpose of induction heating is that you don't need, you know, a bunch of water. I mean, don't get me wrong, an induction cooker for even in the culinary world, it uses a good amount of electricity, but I think that amount, like a 2 kilowatt, would be plenty to boil for your whole house.
Yep.
And I think what you've shown with the redneck hot tub is that, yes, once the threshold is passed and it's warmed up, this will definitely, like one hot water, one, you know, little teapot thing, kind of like you're using coffee pot, is enough.
Yep,
which is intense.
It.
That's very powerful.
All you need is a maintainer for your driver to keep it going. That's it. Once you get it up to operating temperature, like I said, Ted, I was out there in the dead of winter, snow and ice out there on the ground. I was in my swimming shorts in the pool. There was absolutely no insulation under the pool. No insulation. It's open to the atmosphere above the pool. And as long as I was sitting in the pool, I was warm. It was the trip back to the house that was miserable. As soon as I got out of that water, I got cold fast. But once I got it up to operating temperature, even in freezing weather, that thing maintained the temperature. You see what I mean? All you got to do is keep that little energy flowing. It'll keep those molecules moving around, and that water don't have no chance to get cool. You see what
what's
I mean?
What's your wattage draw when it's on full power?
What's the wattage?
Yeah, what would you say that little thing pulls?
Well, whatever a coffee pot puts out, you're just your average coffee pot element, but I guarantee it's a whole lot less than a big old heavy-duty 220 element. Probably would have had the water boiling, plus sending your power pole skyward, you know, like a helicopter because the meter's going so fast.
Yeah, I got a phone that's in HVAC and things, and I've thought for a long time that, you know, induction hot water tanks and induction furnaces, they're just really not on the market, and the ones that are, like, incredibly high, you know, wattage, which to me is, like, not really necessary, but
well,
I don't know who.
If you look at all
somebody
the materials.
Somebody with a little bit of desire, you know, and kind of like a young entrepreneurial heart could definitely step into induction heating for that kind of application.
If you look at the materials that heat up fastest in induction heating, you'll find that stainless will get red hot almost instantaneous inside a magnetic field. And so if you had an induction coil around a stainless steel tank, and then inside that stainless steel tank, you had some stainless steel rods. That heat would transfer to those rods inside there, heating, transferring that heat to that water. So only for a brief period of time, you got a ZVS driver running that doggone induction heater long enough to heat that doggone water up to operating temperature. Once it gets up to operating temperature, because of the insulation factor that you have around this tank, that heat has nowhere to go. So it would act just like a thermos. So you only had to have your hot water heater on for about 5 minutes, maybe the whole entire day, and it kept your water hot. You see what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Go look up how those doggone instant water heaters work. It'll blow your doors off. Well, folks... We're getting down to the wire down here. I didn't even get a chance to finish out this podcast, but it's all right because I did post a link over there in the Super Chat room. And so if you want to go watch the rest of this heating with hydrogen video, you know, basically the links are available. But if go back and re-listen to this show, what I said, and you put that in action with your dream teams, you can make your community so incredibly efficient. And you can find out where all your weaknesses are. And turn those weaknesses into plus. Find out where all the waste that would go on in your community and turn them into a plus. You got a school that's producing food. And a lot of the kids don't eat all the food. They throw it in the garbage, which then in turn goes to the dump. There's biofuel in the trash. All right? You could turn your school's trash into fuel to help run the school. All right? You can turn the school building into a super efficient machine, self-contained generator. Not just with solar power, wind power, piezoelectrics, because when those kids are going up and down the doggone floor in your hallways, you can turn that energy that's being generated while they're going from class to class to energy to charge storage banks that your worst case scenario, your main power grid goes down, which you're not paying very much of anyway, because the only reason why you're connected to the grid is for convenience factor. But in the meantime, When the lights are still on and you're still paying for them, well, the kids as they're going to and from the lunchroom and school or whatever classes, their little footsteps are making electricity. Every time they open and close the door, electricity. Every time they flush the toilet, electricity. Everything that's going on in there, all the motions that's going on through that in that entire house, there is a method where you can capture that energy. You can capture all the waste out of the plumbing itself, from the toilets all the way to the waste in the kitchen, and you can put it into systems that will turn all that waste into fuel that would run generators that would do yet even more. So nothing in this entire school would get wasted. There wouldn't even be no paper trash left in this school when you got done. Because everything that went in the trash can, when the trash can got to a certain level, the trash can would close the lid down tight so no kid got sucked through it. And then it would suck all the paper down through a paper shredder, shred all that paper down, then break it down yet even farther, atomize it, put it into the system, and use that for fuel as well. So even the trash that you got going out, you wouldn't have to take out the trash anymore, is basically what I'm saying. You could make that school so incredibly super efficient, no matter how many kids using that school or how big that school was, it would charge itself up. It would have backup emergency power. It would have fresh water for everybody to drink. It would have energy usage from the power grid so insignificant that if anything, you'd probably be putting power back to the grid. They'd be paying you instead. This is the capability we got. Does it sound plausible to you? No, because you've been told it's not possible. That's why I said there in that deal about why free energy is impossible. It's not impossible because it's not possible. It's impossible because the scientists believe that free energy is impossible, and their belief simply closes all doors. Shaziz Mad Science is here to open those doors back up. And each one of those doors are in your mind. That brilliance that's in your brain, even if it's just something as simple as artistic talent, because this guy knows how to make something, you know how to make it look better. So not only will they be efficient, they'll be beautiful as well. That's the kind of power that we have when we gather together. This is why NASA gathers up the best of the best, the best of all the free thinkers, the best of all the people just like you, and they bring them into their fold, and they make them sign non-disclosure agreements, and then they get the patents, and they control the technology when we, the people, have the same amount of knowledge, but we would rather rely on the supposed representation of our governments, and we'd rather trust that the corporation has all this research and development money, and so they can do all this kind of stuff, when in fact, if we actually, instead of throwing our stuff into trash, turned it into treasure. You see what I'm trying to say here, Ted?
Shaziz, I always see what you're trying to say, bro.
We got it made if we choose it. That's all we got to do. We just got to choose it. If we can get...
Well, I might just, you know what, I might just try to get the little redneck hot tub thing hooked up to the little PEX line heating my greenhouse this winter.
Cool, so you could not only be in the hot tub outside, but you could be, well, go in the greenhouse. Why even get cold when you go, take the doggone hot tub in the greenhouse with you, and so you could sit around, fresh oxygen coming from the plants, you could be in a warm hot tub, sipping one of those little umbrella drinks, and just enjoying life. Man, and if you get hungry, reach over and grab a fruit off the tree. Doggone it, folks. We got every single answer to every single problem to solve all these things that people keep complaining about. Mad science is around because mainstream science sold the devil, so to speak. They want to keep their funding, they want to keep their money, their cushy jobs, and they want to work for NASA, and they want to work for the government and the corporations and get that fat paycheck, while at the same time, everyone else around the world suffers. See, it's not capitalism you got to worry about, it's greed that you got to worry about, and if you don't know how to capitalize on the knowledge that you got, just listen in. We've been telling you for years now here on Mad Science how to capitalize on the knowledge. But you got to gather up your brilliance. You got to gather up your best of your best, your smartest minds in your community, and let them hear this podcast. All right? Bring them here. Bring your best technicians. Bring your best scientists. Have them have a sit down with old Shaziz and tell me where it is that I don't know what I'm talking about. Tell me where it is that I'm wrong. Tell me why it is that there's any kind of waste at all in this world. Because if it was used properly, if we used all the gifts that we've been given by what I believe to be our Creator in this wonderful world out here, this beautiful earth that we live on. Number one, if you work in harmony with nature, nature will love you back and provide so much. If you think about what I'm saying there, think about a tomato. Think about an apple. Think about all the fruits out there and vegetables that have seeds in them. All right? Not only do you get to eat the food, but it also provides another seed for yet even more food. Even off of one potato, you can grow many potatoes. You take a rotten potato, and if you know how to plant that thing, you'll end up with a whole bunch of potatoes. So nature's already provided plenty. Nature's already provided all the energy, more energy than we could ever use in a trillion, 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 bazillion, and to infinity and beyond lifetimes. If we just took some common sense and some time to listen to the brilliance, those folks out there that if you're in a chat room, or if you're over there on a YouTube channel and you see a troll giving somebody a rash, tell them Oshaziz says to put up or shut up. Tell them to put their best on the table. All right, send them over here. So with that said, you've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love, Ted. Thanks for joining me on here. And everybody, I hope you enjoyed this show. Please share this podcast with somebody.
That stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one hand.
Ooh.
One hand.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one hand.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Didn't that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.